going to call the October 6th, 2016 Planning and Zoning Commission meeting to order. Ms. Burns, may we have a roll call, please?
Yes. Mrs. Russell?
Here.
Yes, I am here. Ms. Lowe?
Here.
Mr. Harder?
Here.
Mr. McMahon?
Present.
Mr. Stanton?
Here.
Mr. Strotman? Ms. Rushing?
Here.
We have 8 members present.
Thank you, Ms. Burns. Mr. Zenner, are there any adjustments or additions to the agenda?
No, there are not this evening, ma'am.
Thank you. I'd like to request approval of the regular meeting minutes from the September 22nd meeting. Has everyone received those minutes in advance?
So moved.
Do I have a second?
Second.
Thank you. We'll take a thumbs up on that. Our first matter of the evening is subdivisions. First case is 16-206, a request by the Hinshaw Family Partnership LP, owner to consolidate 3 lots into a single lot by a replat to be known as Anthony's Addition Plat 2. The 0.91-acre subject site is located on the northeast corner of Anthony and Dorsey Streets and is addressed 1401, 1405, and 1407 Anthony Street. May we have a staff report, please?
Yes, you may, Madam Chairman. This is a request to consolidate 3 existing single-family, or I should say multifamily lots, in the East Campus overlay area. The plat is being presented for the purposes of making a single legal lot out of the 3 individual lots that exist today. It is in anticipation of the provisions that are going to be changing in the new Unified Development Code, which would not allow reconstruction over existing property lines. So this is, in essence, a action that's being done in advance of a pending subdivision change that we will be making that currently exists in our code. It is a 0.91-acre tract of land. Again, it is zoned R3 today, and it is improved with 3 multifamily used structures. This is an oblique aerial showing you the Anthony Street frontage on the south, or the bottom of the picture, and the Dorsey Street frontage along the west side of the property. This replatting action actually will redefine what front is for this set of 3 lots. The short side of a lot is considered under our definitions to be the front of a property, and when the replatting action, if approved, occurs, the short side of this lot would become Dorsey Street, and the long side of the lot would be Anthony. This is a corner lot as well, and our code does allow the property owner to request that the director determine what is front or side. At that point, these houses, along with the rest of the homes that are within this particular block, all front Anthony, and it is possible that the front of this parcel as a single lot could still be Anthony Street at some point in the future. Technically, however, because the short side will be Dorsey, that is going to be considered front for the purposes of applying setbacks. Again, this is a consolidation plat. Typically, these types of actions would not be brought before the Planning Commission. Since these are lots that are already legal, there is no there's some additional right-of-way that is being dedicated with the plat itself, and as such, it comes before you. We do, through the platting action, create a legal non-conforming structure, and that would be the one that is on the corner of Anthony and Dorsey. And that is a result, again, of the change in the orientation of front and side setbacks. Because Dorsey will become the front setback, the home that is on the corner of Dorsey and Anthony Street becomes legally non-conforming. It can continue to exist. It can be maintained in its condition, even though it does encroach into what would be platted as the front setback along Dorsey, which is at a minimum of a 25-foot front. There is no other structure along Dorsey Street that fronts to Dorsey, and therefore the median setback standard along that street frontage per the code is not applicable. The applicant has measured median setback along Anthony Street. They have, however, shown on the plat the required 25-foot building setback, which is consistent with our zoning requirements. The applicant's surveyor is here to address the median setback issue, should the commissioners desire to question that. Median setback may result in a slightly larger front setback or setback along Anthony Street, even though it is the side. And median setback is taken between the two intervening streets, which would be Dorsey and then the street immediately to the east of this block, which is two lots to the east. The density, which we did run a density calculation based on the combination of three individual lots to a single parcel. In the R3 zoning district, we allow multiple detached structures, provided each detached structure or dwelling unit within the structures has a minimum of 2,500 square feet of lot area per unit. There are a total of 9 units on this property, and the site, as defined within the staff report, has more than adequate square footage to accommodate those 9 units within the 3 buildings. Again, dedication of additional right-of-way and easements are being provided as a part of the plat, and the plat does meet all of our subdivision requirements. Subdivision standards require that you provide the setback along all rights-of-way. The setback is required to be shown compliant with the zoning ordinance, which is a 25-foot front setback. Again, however, the application of a median setback may be an appropriate measure at this point, and the applicant surveyor can speak to that. We are recommending approval of the final plat as it is drawn at this point, and if the commission has any questions, we'll be more than happy to try to answer them for you.
Are there any questions for staff? I had one. Mr. Zennert, is there any proposed new use for the site that's coming forward with this?
Not at this point. As I indicated, this is a, for lack of better terms, a preemptive replatting of the existing lots to ensure that it is a single parcel. So at a point in the future, and we don't know if that will ever occur, the ability to build on a single tract that's been platted in accordance with the new standards, where there are no property lines intervening, is already created. The new UDC provision does not allow an individual to build a structure over a property line and have it considered a single lot as it is today. So that is why this plat has been presented. It's more of a preemptive corrective action to ensure that in the future, should they redevelop, they have the ability to utilize the entire parcel without going through a different platting action at that time.
Thank you. Any additional questions for staff? Seeing none, even though this is not part of the public hearing portion of the meeting, if there's anyone in the audience that would like to speak on the matter, we would welcome that. If you feel you have any information that would be helpful to our understanding or in reaching a decision, please approach the podium and please give your name and address for the record.
My name is Jeff Akers. I live at 1411 Anthony, which is directly adjacent to the properties in question. I've lived in East Campus for more than 20 years. I live in an R1 house, family dwelling. And I see this action, just as was stated, as a preparation for ultimately a structure being built for student housing, which I oppose. In general, I am very well acquainted with the nature of the neighborhood in general and the infrastructure that exists, and the addition of another such property would be detrimental to the overall nature of the neighborhood, as well as putting considerable strain on the existing infrastructure, including sewage, electricity, the actual parking facilities available. Looking at the property and having an understanding of how it probably would be utilized, I would expect to see impermeable surfaces for parking being included in that area. Knowing the problems that we have had with stormwater and the considerable effort that we have put forth on my house to alleviate what already exists, I'm quite concerned about that as well. So I don't see much of a benefit, only a downside to this, including the addition of noise and additional issues that would be associated with the ultimate facility that would be put in that place. I like the neighborhood as it is. I understand change must occur, but to totally disrupt the nature of the neighborhood, I don't see that as a positive thing. That's what I wish to say.
Thank you. Are there any questions for the speaker?
I do, sir. If I may. Yeah. Hi, Michael McMahon. Could you exemplify for me the stormwater issues that you currently have?
When we initially arrived in the East neighbor, our East Campus neighborhood, East Campus neighborhood, when we would have a very substantial rain, we would see a significant amount of water coming down the incline from the upslope, going back and literally coming up against the side of our house as much as, an inch or so thick, a sheet of water. Now, that has been alleviated a little bit, but it was aggravated again when additional parking was put back there. And so the problem was aggravated even more at that point, and we would see a very substantial amount of water literally coming down the hill and going up against the side of our home, where we ultimately ended up building a large drainage system specifically to accommodate that water on the side of the house so the house would not be damaged.
You did this personally, or the city did this?
No. We paid to have it done.
That's where I was going.
I didn't dig it out, no.
I used to be your neighbor before you lived there. I lived next to where you live. So you're saying the stormwater issues are significant now?
They are, and the thing is, it was improved with what we did to the point to where our basement, for the most part, is dry, where it used to be regular running water down there.
And one of your concerns, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off, is that there will be more impervious surface and more runoff.
Impermeable surfaces added in, you're going to see more. It's simple matter of, but there are things that can be done to alleviate that. I'm not saying that engineering solutions are not available. I'm just simply saying that if that's not kept in mind, that is an issue.
Let me go a little further. I don't mean to keep you too long. Do you have any sanitary sewer issues where you live?
The interesting thing about Anthony is you've got systems on systems which have accumulated over years. Our property is 100 or so years old, and I have seen instances where there has been backup of the sewage system in that area. I've seen a number of different things that have happened, and also it appears to me, and I don't know this for sure, that the city is not exactly sure what exists at that point. I know that there is an older system that exists there, and for all I know, there may be some houses along that are still using that.
Are you on a private common collector? Is part of the sewer yours? That's what I'm asking.
No. I do not own part of it.
Okay, so you're totally on a city line where you are.
As far as I'm aware, yes.
When's the last time you had a sewer issue on your area of the street?
About, don't quote me on this, but I think about 6 years ago.
All right. I have no more questions of you. Any of you other commissioners? Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. McMahon. Thank you, Mr. Akers.
Thank you. Is that it?
Is there anyone else that wished to speak on this matter?
Members of the commission, I'm Ron Luke, office of 914 North College. I'm the land surveyor on this plat, as well as the next one. And to answer some of your questions, or one pertinent one, there's no development plan for this, nor is there any sale pending or anything that I know of on this, to the best of my knowledge. This is a replat, consolidating three lots into one, and conforming to the subdivision regulations, and not any site plan. So there is no plan for this at the moment. If this passes all the concerns of the city staff, there is not really any reason to deny it. The time to oppose any kind of future development on this would be a presentation of a site plan, some kind of all the plans that go with that, stormwater, sewer, street, sidewalk, those things. But at this point, we're just consolidating it into a single lot. It's a rooming house, a triplex, and a duplex combined on this place. Got any questions, I can answer them.
Are there any questions for this speaker? Thank you, Mr. Luke.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else who would like to speak on this matter?
Hello, I'm Janet Hammond. I live at 1844 Cliff Drive. And the replat of lots 19, 20, and 21 of Anthony's addition that will consolidate these three lots into one raises several issues. First, this speculative replat would be detrimental to other property in the neighborhood, and detrimental to the property in the neighborhood outweighs the benefits to the developer. In fact, what is the benefit to the developers or the public in this replat? There is not an updated infrastructure in the neighborhood, and the replatting of the subject site would result in the formal creation of a single lot, which could be redeveloped, adding a great burden to the old, outdated infrastructure. I believe part of the subject site has a private sewer line. I'm not sure. Maybe it's on Dorsey Street, but I think it might come across onto the Dorsey side of the lot. Second, if the front yard is determined to be Anthony, and I did just learn that staff could, or the director could, at the developer's discretion, change the front yard to Anthony Street, I don't see that the median setback, as clearly shown by this plat map, would be recognized. You can clearly see that the three structures of five on Anthony on that block are more than 25 feet back. And we have no indication from the staff report, from this plat map, as to what the median setback actually would be for a new structure. So to me, that leaves just enough of a question even. What would go into the recorded record is this plat map showing, or the final plat showing, a 25-foot building line. And I see that as a big red flag, even though it might be, and it would be in the minutes, it would be somewhere, that the median setback could be and should be met. But again, my experience is unless the issue is raised, it's not routinely followed that there is a median setback for the block in the neighborhood. The third issue is, according to the staff report, several of the structures will become nonconforming in relationship to the new setbacks. Section 2928 on nonconforming uses deals extensively with existing nonconforming uses of buildings and lands at the time of passage of Ordinance 9958, I don't know what that is, or annexation. It lists various ways that nonconforming uses can continue or must be discontinued. There is nothing I can find that says it is okay to create nonconforming uses or buildings. Why would you approve a replat that creates nonconforming buildings? So I ask you to deny this final replat of lots 19, 20, and 21 of Anthony's addition. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Hammond. Are there any questions for this speaker? I had one. On the median setback, is your concern that the median setback for the block is actually greater than the 25 feet?
I'm sorry, yes, indeed. As you can see, all three of these houses are sitting back further than 25 feet. There is an allowance for a front porch to encroach into a building setback, but the houses sit back further, and I believe the other two to the south, one of which is Mr. Akers, and the other, which is the corner of Shockley and Anthony, is also zoned R1. I didn't measure. I don't know the measurements. I'm not sure who provided measurements, but I'm fairly confident that they sit back at least as far as these three do.
Thank you. Is there anyone else wishing to speak on this matter? You do. Please approach the podium.
I can respond to that front yard median setback.
Oh.
Probably should be another
Mr.
foot
Luke,
or so.
Can you repeat your name and address?
I'm Ron Luke, the land surveyor, 914 North College Avenue here in Columbia.
Thank you.
And I can probably agree with her on that. Their median setback probably should be another foot back. I've measured the other two houses. There's only five on the block, and I can come up with the median setback and establish that along there if it pleases the commission.
Thank you. Anyone else who would like to speak to this matter? If not, I'm going to close public discussion. Any discussion amongst the commission? Mr. McMahon.
Thank you. I have concerns about, Ms. Hammond's called it a speculative replat. That's how I see this, as a speculative replat. The expedited nature, Mr. Luke, notwithstanding, Mr. Hinshaw's a businessman. He'll have a plan quite soon, I would imagine. I'm inclined to vote no on this because I see the speculative and creating the nonconformity. I appreciate we'll address this issue again when the plan comes up if we get to that point. But right now, I'm going to withhold my approval. Just wanted to say that.
Mr. Stanton.
I think some good points are made this evening. I guess where I'm at is that if any future plans for this plat occur, doesn't it have to conform to the overlay of the neighborhood? And if how much teeth does that have? How much weight does that have in the future development? That's my concern. I definitely see it as a business move, and my concern is: will it have to conform to the overlay?
Mr. Zenner, can you help us out with that question?
Yes, it will need to conform to the overlay and all of its standards, and it will also need to conform with any zoning requirements that exist at the time that redevelopment occurs.
Do you happen to know if the East Campus overlay has requirements for developments in the R3 zoned lots?
There are provisions within the East Campus overlay that refer to lots created prior to 2002, legal lots created prior to 2002, having an option to follow either the existing R3 zoning regulations or the overlay standards. Those lots that are then created after 2002 are required, do not have the option. They are required to comply with the R3 zoning standards as they exist today. That is the interpretation that has been provided to us. The code, again, this is impacted by the Unified Development Code and provisions that exist within it for neighborhood transitions and protections. that would, in essence, require particular design features as well as setbacks and stepbacks from adjacent property lines, given that the R1 property is immediately to the east, that would have to be complied with. Therefore, the replatting of the property doesn't relieve this individual of those future requirements, nor those that exist today under the East Campus overlay.
Thank you. Ms. Rushing.
I agree with Mr. McMahon. I really don't understand this request at this point in time. If the property owner were to decide to sell one part of this property, be back here asking to separate the lots. As long as they have three individual buildings on them, I don't see the need to consolidate them. If they want to develop it as a single lot, then they could do the consolidation at that time. And then we wouldn't be creating non-conforming uses.
I'm fine right now.
Ms. Yes. Russell.
Go ahead, please.
I am going to support doing this. I think that after the consolidation, it will have to meet all the requirements of any new code we may approve, any stormwater regulations. They will be back in front of us for some kind of final determination. So I think it's a property rights thing. Also, the owner wants to consolidate it into one lot, and I'm going to support that.
Mr. Harding.
I feel that I'm going to support it as well, too. All three of the lots are theirs, and they have the ability to request the replat. I like the East Campus area as it is now, but I feel that they should have that ability to at least try to consolidate into one lot. And I'm sure that in the future, if there is potential for something new, it'll go through some pretty strict scrutiny and stuff. So I'm gonna tend to support it.
Mr. Zenner, if when a proposal is made, will that come back before planning and zoning?
No, it will not.
Okay.
This is a non-planned district property under the provisions of the East Campus overlay that is reviewed internally. Neighborhood Association is notified of that review in order to be able to provide comment on its compliance prior to the building permit being issued. So, no, you will not see this project again unless there is a request to rezone to permit some other type of use on the property. Under the proposed UDC, again, this will go to RMF. It will be subject to all RMF zoning standards, design requirements, screening, stormwater. So, I mean, there are other provisions that will apply to this in addition to those that are design-driven through the East Campus overlay itself. I would like to also, if I may, Ms. Chairman, remind the Commission, this is a technical item. This is what we refer to, as we have talked before, a ministerial action. The nature of how this property will be used in the future is really not relevant to the discussion. If the project does comply with our requirements within the subdivision regulations, which we have identified that it does, with potentially the exception of a median setback on what will become a side yard lot line at this point. Other than that one issue, it does comply. And just to speak to the fact of Ms. Hammond's question as it relates to nonconformity for the corner lot, it has been standard practice for many years that the replatting of a property that through our application of additional right-of-way or the application of a setback standard and a structure becomes nonconforming as a result of that is not an illegal action. It is a result of the desire of the property owner to replat and reconfigure their lot. And therefore, it is not addressed, as Ms. Hammond has pointed out, but it has not also been an issue that we have denied the ability to do it. We have recently done it on three plats that I can think of. So that issue, unfortunately, I don't believe is one that is relevant either. This structure will be allowed until it is removed to exist in its current location and operate as it does today. Upon removal or destruction greater than 75%, it will need to become compliant. And again, we are unaware of any development plans at this point that have been submitted to redevelop this site for anything other than the existing structures that are here. This is a replatting action that, with the exception of a front yard median setback on Anthony Street, is compliant. And if you would like to make a motion, the motion, if it is your desire to require that the median setback be applied to Anthony Street, you will need to include that in your motion, if you would, please.
Thank you, Mr. Zenner. Would anyone care to frame a motion?
I will.
Ms. Russell.
In the case of 16-206 Anthony Addition Plat 2, I recommend approval of the final plat with a requirement of a median setback of 25 feet.
If I may, median setback applied to the Anthony Street.
To Anthony Street, right.
Second.
Thank you. So motion made by Ms. Russell, second by Mr. Stanton. May we get a vote, please?
Yes. Ms. Russell?
Yes.
My vote is no. Ms. Lowe?
Yes.
Mr. Harder?
Yes.
Mr. McMahon?
No.
Mr. Stanton?
Yes.
Ms. Rushing?
No.
We have 4 votes in the affirmative, 3 votes no. Motion carries.
Thank you, Ms. Burns. Recommendation for approval will be forwarded to City Council. Next case is case 16-207. It's a request by the Hinshaw Family Partnership LP owner for approval of a one-lot replat to be known as replat of the Lot 3 of the revised plat of the Cunningham Place and Lots 1, 2, and 3 of Mitchell Court, Columbia, Missouri. The 0.77-acre subject site is located on the east side of College Avenue, approximately 350 feet south of Paris Road, and is addressed 404 and 408 North College Avenue. May we get a staff report, please?
Yes, ma'am. This is another consolidation plat, again by the same applicant as the prior item. We are looking at consolidating 4 lots into a single lot, again for the same purposes as we have previously discussed, in anticipation of the revisions to the development restrictions that will no longer allow a property owner to build over a property line to have it considered a single lot. This is a final plat, again a ministerial action. At this point, this is on North College Avenue, and as you can see here in the map, just south of Rogers Street, east side of College. Oblique aerial will show you the existing improvements on the site. 2 structures, total of 6 dwelling units, if I recall correctly. Garage, and then you will notice that the driveway comes back between these 2 units, sandwiched in between 2 existing multifamily structures here and their associated parking. Again, consolidation plat. We are getting additional right-of-way for College Avenue along this, as well as easements. The density is in conformance with the R3 standards of a minimum of 2,500 square feet per dwelling unit. And as I had indicated, there are 6 total dwelling units on this site. The site does contain more than adequate square footage to accommodate those dwelling units. R3 district does allow multiple detached structures to be on a single lot. And therefore, from a zoning perspective, that this is a consistent use of R3 zoned land. Again, this particular item does meet all of our subdivision standards. Dedication of the additional road right-of-way as well as those easements was a requirement to ensure that we had adequate half-width for College Avenue and adequate utility locations. Staff is recommending approval of the plat.
Thank you, Mr. Zenner. Are there any questions of staff? Ms. Burns.
Mr. Zenner, could we go back to the photograph that the one of the red lines seemed to indicate that the property was, this is the entire lot that we're talking about, correct, or lots that we're talking about?
That is correct. The line, since this is an oblique aerial, no, the house does not go over the property line. it is all included in the boundary.
I wondered if I was seeing things. Thank you.
Not a problem. Any other questions to the aerial?
Any other questions of staff?
Well, I had a question with regard to something that is noted as Mitchell Court. Is my recollection correct?
That is the subdivision, the technical name for the subdivision as a whole, the lots that are incorporated within it. We have a Cunningham Place Plat 2, but it is comprised of two different subdivisions. And I can let Mr. Luke respond to that as well, and more his wheelhouse than mine. But we have two platted subdivisions here, of which portions of the lots came from both.
So there's no roadway easement across the property?
Not that I am aware of. Okay. What you see in the middle, which would be the driveway that is here, and again, I will let Mr. Luke respond to this, may have been at one point Mitchell Court, but it may have been vacated at a date in the past, but that is now part of the lots in question, the driveway that appears to go between the two buildings. To me, when I first looked at this aerial, it did also look like a roadway myself, but that is its private driveway.
Any other questions for staff? Seeing none, again, this is not an item that's on our public hearing portion of the meeting, but if there is anyone in the audience that has information that they feel would help us in our discussion or reaching a decision, you're welcome to come forward. Please give your name and address. Mr. Luke.
My name is Ron Luke. I am part of Luke Surveying. Well, I am the Luke Surveying Operation, 914 North College Avenue, Columbia, Missouri. Again, no development is planned for this. This is not contingent upon any sale. There is nothing marketed. I can only emphasize that enough. It's just a replat consolidating four lots into a single lot to be processed through this process now. This used to go through City Public Works Department, and you guys wouldn't see this. But there is no site plan, nothing planned for this, no plans for building for structures at all on this thing. The granting of 20 feet of additional right-of-way to College Street was done at CATSO's request out front. The Mitchell Court that you see there is a private street, or was a not a private street, but there was an easement for Mitchell Court. Laura Mitchell, the woman that owned this back in the 60s, must have had a husband who developed this into the two rear lots and the front lot for the northern house. And they had to have access to those two rear lots, so they have a private drive easement to that. Mr. Hinshaw had his, well, one of his brothers decided to put up a sign for Mitchell Court, made the city designated as Mitchell Court. Kind of honors the Mitchells that live there in the North House. That's about it. Just four lots consolidating into a single lot. If you have any questions, I can try to answer them.
Any questions for this speaker? I see none. Thank you, Mr. Luke.
Thank you.
Any other speakers on this matter?
My name is Peter Norgard, 1602 Hinkson Avenue. I have to come out against this particular recommendation. No offense to Mr. Luke, but again, there are no plans, so there is no purpose I see other than speculative development in the future. We in the Benton Stevens neighborhood are actively trying to get our overlay written a little tighter. I realize, I guess, that this would still be possible in the future. However, we feel that this is an encroachment on people that live in the neighborhood. The landowner has rights, but so do the adjacent landowners, and we feel that this is chipping away very slowly at the nature of our neighborhood. So I would ask that you not approve this. Thank you.
Thank you. Yes, Mr. Stanton.
I meant to ask this at the last case we just had. Not think the overlay and the future development codes will protect your neighborhood enough? If he develops this, he has to.
Well, of course. You know, the process for modifying our overlay is a negotiation. So we have to negotiate with the people. We, the owner-occupiers, have to negotiate with the non-resident owners to come up with a solution that works for everybody. So obviously, those of us that live in the neighborhood and own homes there are not keen on the idea of having 10-unit structures put in. You know, we're contending with that over on Windsor Street, and, you know, there's a lot of animosity in the neighborhood over this.
Any other speakers on this matter?
My name is Rita Fleshman. I live at 1602 Hinkson Avenue. And I would like to address your issue on, would the overlay plan be enforced and would it cover the issues? In my experience of 30 years living there, the developers have found ways and loopholes to undermine the overlay plan. And unbeknownst to, like, us as neighborhood, like, dwellers there, that homeowners, they have come in and they have, like, misrepresented themselves and have, like, pushed their buildings forward. They have, like, redrawn lines. They have, like, taken other houses and made them into one unit, destroyed community gardens. There are not situations that you can say, yes, an overlay plan exists, but that doesn't mean that they abide by it. And I'll be happy to take any questions. Yes, sir.
Mr. Stanton.
To my knowledge, you'll be notified if there's any future development plans because they have to apply to your overlay. Do you have a mechanism as a neighborhood association to watchdog that? I mean, this is kind of where we're getting at grassroots activism. I mean, you know, that's where it's coming down to.
We do. Peter, who just spoke, actually is my husband, and he is the Neighborhood Association president. And we have an active grassroots level that are, like, working diligently, signing petitions, getting people involved. And we have an active Neighborhood Association that is willing to work and to, like, if we are notified, but the developments that have gone on previously, we were not notified, and when we brought up the issues when they were, like, too close to the sidewalks, and the developer said, oh, they'll take care of it, they have never, never, to this day, taken care of it. And so, yes, we have an overlay plan, but just because it exists doesn't mean there's ways that people get around it. And we fought an easement, I believe that's what it's called, on the Windsor Street, and we lost. We won the easement. Is that right, Peter? But in the end, we ended up, the community garden's gone, the buildings are going in, more development's going in, and houses are being destroyed.
Question, Ms. Burns.
Bless you, too.
Are you and Mr. Norgaard speaking on behalf of your neighborhood association or just as individuals?
I am speaking as an individual, and I believe Peter was. But he can speak again.
I just wondered if you were part of. If a group
I was answering the question that. Now I'm speaking as myself. And I've lived there for 30 years. And I moved there because it was a community, and there were parks, and there were schools, and it was a livable place. And I want to say, in the last month, we have called the police for parties and loud night parties that have gone on into the early mornings for like at least once every week. And that was not what we came for. That was not what we bought into the community for. And this is new developments that this is happening at. And I am just wanting to preserve our community.
Can
I know this is a, I know this is an emotional plea.
These lots are zoned R3, mm-hmm. which is multifamily. Mm-hmm. What role do you see multifamily playing in the neighborhood?
Well, to answer that question, ironically, I am not a realtor. I own property. I'm a landlord, and I have all my properties are R3 right now, and we take care of who we get in there. My oldest house was built in 1896, and it has a huge lot, and it could be destroyed at a flash, and if I wanted to make money, but I don't. I want to keep the community whole and active and vibrant, and so therefore, I don't do this. I mean, if I was in it for the money, sure, I could replat everything, I could sell it as an R3, but I don't, because it is a community. Did I answer your question?
Do you see a role for multifamily properties in the neighborhood?
Well, I do, if it's like, but it's, I guess, I believe there's enough multifamilies in our neighborhood already. And I think that what we need to focus on is families in the neighborhood and not multifamilies. And if people want to develop like duplexes or something like a larger, like that could accommodate like a young family that is just starting out, that are graduate students that are just starting out, and they want to have a family, and it's near the parks, and they're not having parties unless it's a birthday party or an anniversary party. I mean, that's what neighborhoods are for, in my mind. So, I don't know. Any other questions?
Any other questions for this speaker? I don't see any at this time. Thank you very much.
I love this neighborhood.
So. Evident. Thank you for speaking. Are there any other speakers on this case? Seeing none, we're going to close the public hearing portion of this and comments of commission. Mr. Stanton.
And I put it pretty plainly, this is a technical. His right to consolidate his property. I would hope that Mr. Henshaw, good citizen, and I really hope that the overlay and the neighborhood associations stay on his behind and watch every blade of grass that moves on that property if you're concerned about it being developed. But this is a technical endeavor, and I'm willing to make a motion if there's no
additional discussion. Mr. Stanton, I think you have the floor.
In case 16-207, Cunningham Place, plat 2, final plat, I move to approve the final plat.
I'll second that.
Mr. Stanton made the motion. Ms. Russell seconded. Can we have a vote, please?
Yes. Ms. Russell.
Yes.
My vote is no. Ms. Lowe.
Yes.
Mr. Harder.
Yes.
Mr. McMahon.
No.
Mr. Stanton.
Yes.
Ms. Rushing.
No.
Okay, we have 4 votes in the affirmative, 3 votes negative. Motion carries.
Thank you, Ms. Ferns. Recommendation for approval will be forwarded to City Council. That's going to close our subdivision portion of the agenda, and we're going to move on to the public hearing and subdivision portion.
Mr. Chairman, if we may take a 5-minute recess for our interpreter.
All right, we are going to take a 5-minute recess for our interpreter. We're going to reconvene at 2 to 8. Zoning meeting back into session. We're moving on to the public hearings and subdivisions. Our first case is case number 16-178. It's a request by Crockett Engineering Consultants on behalf of Tompkins Homes and Development and Glenn Smith Trust and Lily Beatrice Smith owners to annex 90.8 acres into the City of Columbia and to permanently zone the property R1, one-family dwelling district. The subject site is located on the western terminus of Smith Drive, approximately 3,000 feet west of Scott Boulevard. May we have a staff report, please?
Yes, thank you, Ms. Chairman. As you had stated, this is a request for an annexation and permanent zoning. Permanent zoning would be what we're considering tonight at the Planning and Zoning Commission. And in addition to that, an associated preliminary plat. So it is two separate cases, one being the zoning request and one being the preliminary plat. So they are requesting the permanent zoning for this site, all 90.8 acres, to be zoned R1. And I apologize for the slide here. I don't think that has the updated information. I apologize for that. So it is a 90.8 acre site, all R1 zoning. The approval is for a 140-lot subdivision with 133 buildable lots. This is a aerial view of the site to give you some context for the location of the property. As you can see on the far east side of the screen, Broadway, as it transitions to Scott Boulevard, this property is located at the terminus of Smith Drive, which enters the property about the center of the site. Also, access to the site is provided by another local residential street on the southeast corner of that. That is Whitefish Drive. So the site does have access to public right-of-way that is currently within the city. This is kind of a broad overview of the neighboring zoning of the properties that abut the site. As you can see, the ones that are shaded to the east and northeast, those are the properties that are currently within the City of Columbia's boundary. The very pale yellow is zoned R1, which is consistent with the requested zoning. The green portion of the site is the subject site we're considering tonight. As you can see, the subdivision to the northeast includes a single-family residential subdivision. To the kind of southeast is a currently undeveloped single-family subdivision that includes just two lots for the time being. Also to the southeast is the Quail Creek subdivision. To the south of the property is a large lot county subdivision, single-family residential subdivision known as Greystone. To the west of this site, as you can see, and you may be able to tell from this picture, the western edge of this property is the bluffs for Perchy Creek bottom. So to the west is generally agricultural land at this time, and to the north of this property is actual Perchy Creek. The zoning request, again, as I had previously stated, is for R1 for the entire site. As some of the commissioners may remember, this was before the commission earlier this year with a similar request. However, there was two different zonings requested at that point. There was a PUD associated with that request as well. So this has been revised. That project was withdrawn prior to council consideration. We do know there was extensive consultation with neighboring property owners and neighboring homeowners association, and they resubmitted at this point with a revised submittal, and part of that was the R1 zoning for the entire site, in contrast to the original request. When reviewing the site, we do find that it is consistent with the zoning for the abutting properties, as it is single family. It is consistent with the Columbia Imagine designation as a neighborhood district. I do point out, though, in Columbia Imagine, there is other areas that are identified within the document. One of those would be sensitive areas and also open space. And as you can see, at least on the aerial here, there's a majority, or not a majority, but there's a fair amount of the site that is currently wooded. As we'll see on the preliminary plat, They are locating much of that wooded area within common lots. They are subject to the minimum tree preservation standard as well. With that in mind, we can kind of point out the fact that there it will be preservation on this site. Now, I'll touch on the karst issue here a little bit later. As I noted, there are several common lots located on the preliminary plat that are identified for a lot of the sensitive areas. That includes some of the steep slope, the steepest slope on this site. Some other Columbia imagined considerations. This property is located outside of the urban service area. Generally, everything that's shown here within the city is within the urban service area. So the boundary is literally right at this property. So what that means is the urban service area generally gives staff direction that properties such as this should not develop that would require additional payment by the city of infrastructure costs, capital improvement costs. What it also does is allow the city to review it as far as impacts to the basically the infrastructure network, streets, and other things. So we, to address those issues, and in addition to that, address issues that were identified with a traffic impact study that was required to be submitted by the applicant. We did identify issues that are being addressed through the development agreement. The development agreement specifically addresses about four main topics. Some of those are generally traffic-related, but also infrastructure-related, trail easements, and some other special interest-type things that are on the site, which I'll touch on here in a second. Again, like I had said, 25% of the site will be required to be preserved. And also, I should note that given the fact that a lot of these sensitive areas will be located in common lots, the applicant has put a note on the preliminary plat that restricts the size of those common lots. So what's shown on the preliminary plat will generally be where it is now as far as common lot locations. So it would not be reduced beyond a certain percentage of what's shown there. The preliminary plat, again, is a 130-lot development with access for the site from two main locations. That would be Smith Drive, as you can see on the illustration here. That access point is being constructed to a major collector standard. It's a 66-foot right-of-way. Whitefish Drive to the southeast is a local residential and enters the site there to provide a through connection from the city's existing public right-of-way system. I'll point out with this layout, the overall density of the site is approximately 1.5 dwelling units per acre. That is fairly consistent with surrounding subdivisions. But that does take into account most of the undevelopable area, which is the steep slopes and generally the areas that are in the common lots. I point out also that this site was intended to be developed at some point. And that, well, I should say intended to be developed, but the properties adjacent to it were developed in such a manner to facilitate the development of the site. There was additional right-of-way granted with the plat to the southeast, the Quail Creek Plat 5, that allowed right-of-way to enter into this site. And the same with Whitefish Drive area. There was additional right-of-way granted when Greystone was platted at that point in order to facilitate these connections. I think it's important to point that out. That these connections were planned for at some point. One other thing on here that I want to point out, as you can see in the yellow area of the preliminary plat, that is a location of the proposed Broadway extension, as indicated on the CATSO's major roadway plan. It's identified as a major arterial, which is 110-foot right-of-way. This location, as you can see, really only crosses a portion of the property, but it does extend to the northeast, where it would in the future potentially connect with the existing terminus of Broadway. There is a conceptual alignment currently on the major roadway plan that basically is consistent with this location. The dedication of that and a payment fee in lieu of that is also identified in the development agreement as far as the cost allocation that is responsibility of the developer. One thing I'll point out that is different from the original preliminary plat, you may remember a discussion with Smith Drive functioning as a major collector that would cross this site. And if you remember from the previous preliminary plat, would trail to the northwest from where it currently terminates. That plan was included on the original preliminary plat. The intent was to explore the option of adding that as a major roadway plan, perhaps to either substitute for Broadway or to augment the Broadway corridor in the major roadway plan. That proposal was taken to CATSO. They evaluated the location. They held a public hearing on adding it to the major roadway plan, and they voted to take no action at this point. So based on that action, the preliminary plat has been revised to reflect the fact that that was not added to the MRP. Smith Drive, as it terminates now, if you can tell, the solid black line around the site is the property boundary. So if you could tell, there is a little bit of an unusual alignment here on the west side. Basically, this is the location of a property that is owned by a property owner to the west that extends into the property. Smith Drive terminates generally here, and the intent would be this connection would provide the possibility to provide street network connection to the property to the west in the future if it ever does, developed by a private developer in the future. So generally staff, given the knowledge and given the understanding that CATSO did not add this as MRP, still felt it important to provide that connection, which is required in the subdivision regulations, so that if that connection is warranted in the future, whether it be soon or 20 years down the road, we have not eliminated the possibility that that roadway can extend. And to facilitate that, there was additional right-of-way in the vicinity of this intersection to help basically future alignments that may be needed to facilitate that connection, so those could be provided for in the future. Again, I touched on Smith extending to the west, and also some of the impacts that we identified with the subdivision development here that could impact other sites. And I point out one of those was a possible impact at the intersection of Smith and Scott, where there is a traffic light currently. The impact from this site on that intersection was found to warrant some additional financial considerations to mitigate those impacts. That agreement has been, arrangement has been included in the development agreement as well. And I'll point out here just kind of a broad overview. The location that I'm speaking of is the area circled in red. But also you can see to the north of the site, which is the green portion where Broadway is, that is generally the MRP alignment. I can say that the alignment doesn't have any type of final engineering design, so this is a bit of a illustrative location and a general location where they've looked at grades and feel like this is a good alignment, but final engineering would need to be taking place in the future to facilitate the final location, so which is a similar case to many of our major roadways. That point comes a little bit farther into the future. One thing I'll touch on, too, is there is a variance request associated with this case, which I didn't mention in the beginning. So the applicant has requested a variance to Section 2553, which generally relates to lot arrangement. And again, it generally restricts new single-family access driveways onto major collectors. Now, as I mentioned early on, Smith is being designed to a major collector standard, so a variance is technically required to allow any type of new residential driveways onto Smith Drive. Staff looked at this site. We do not object to the variance, and there's several reasons why. We did discuss this with the applicant. We requested several modifications to the design, several developer-imposed restrictions on the development of these six lots. We felt with the limitation on the number of lots of this site and the fact that they will be required to have shared driveways, so that will reduce the number of driveways onto Smith by half. So instead of six, there will be three. Garages should be side-load garages. That'll enable people to back out and turn around into egress from their lot onto Smith Drive frontwards instead of backing into Smith, making it a much safer type situation. We also requested that they increase the building setback from 25 feet to 35 feet to give that additional buffer from the roadway, given that it is a slightly higher class than a local residential street. We also looked at traffic calming solutions, and they have agreed to install several traffic calming speed tables along Smith. That as traffic approaches from the east will help reduce the speed of the traffic to also create a more safe environment for traffic entering and exiting these lots. We felt with these concessions, we could support this requested variance for these lots specifically. One other issue that I'll discuss is something that's not necessarily a variance, but it is something that's included in the subdivision regulations, and I'll kind of discuss that a little bit more. One of these, the issue here is the prevalence of cul-de-sacs within development. As you can see, there are currently six cul-de-sacs within development. Staff is asking that these two in particular on the west side of this site, which would be Angels Rest Court and Briar Rose Court, we're recommending that those be connected so that it creates a through street, and there's several reasons we're recommending that. Generally, the subdivision regs recommend that through streets should be encouraged, and cul-de-sacs should generally be less prevalent than other streets and then through streets. There's a very practical reason why through streets are preferred within the subdivisions that the city approves. A lot of these have to do with efficiencies of delivery of services and also efficiency of traffic movement. In general, I explained kind of my staff report, but with every cul-de-sac you have creates an opportunity for service delivery vehicles to basically go one trip down and back for each delivery needed to be made. So without connectivity, those service vehicles will go down a street to make a delivery and then have to go back out that street without the possibility of then going on a through street that would allow them to connect possibly to another delivery. So thereby, it could be doubling basically the time and energy and resources needed to go down cul-de-sacs. And that's the same for postal service, street cleaning, garbage collection. Basically, any of these would create inefficiencies in the system by reducing connectivity of streets. It's also a bit of a philosophical issue. Connected streets, from a planning perspective, make, we think, better connected communities. So we do realize that everyone kind of wants to live on cul-de-sacs so they can kind of have their own space. But in the broader scheme of things, we do feel like connectivity to some scale is a very important part of creating new subdivisions. The recommendation is not that all cul-de-sacs should be eliminated. There is a place and a time for cul-de-sacs. Generally, we would look at appropriate situations such as along ridges, which I think we've discussed previously for requests, as appropriate situations to develop along a ridge where there isn't a lot of practical connection options. But in this case, that does not seem to be the case. It seems to be a cul-de-sac that is not conforming to some type of topographical challenge. So we feel like the connection could be made here fairly easily. So our recommendation is that the preliminary plat be approved with the condition that this connection be made. So there isn't a specific variance that needs to be approved, but if the Plan and Zoning Commission wishes to also make that condition, then that would need to be made going forward to be considered a conforming subdivision, if that makes sense. All right. So a couple things I want to point out, too, is items of interest. This property has a lot of things kind of going for it or going on in it. One of those is we have been made aware of a possible Native American site. I hesitate to say burial site. I can't confirm if there's actually remains in there, but that is generally how it's being referred to currently. The applicant has agreed to isolate this location and place it on a common lot. I'll point out there are not that many city-specific regulations that occur here. This would be regulated by state statutes that govern how you handle human remains. So part of the development agreement is the recognition that this could be a human remains site and that they agree to follow all pertinent state regulations for handling of this. We do think it's a nice feature for them to be able to preserve the sites within the subdivision. I think it could be a nice feature for the site if you enjoy that kind of thing, the historical nature of that location. Another thing that is something I touched on earlier is The site is prevalent with karst topography. If you're not familiar with that is, that's generally caves and sinkholes, that sort of geological features. So as you can see on this illustration, basically the heavy dash lines are where they have identified what we've called basically sinkhole protection areas. And they've worked very closely with our staff, our site development staff, in these regulations to identify these areas. There is no specific restriction on developing on karst topography, but as part of the Columbia Imagine direction about sensitive areas, we have directed them to provide this this identification of sites so that we are aware of it, and they've agreed to basically build in a manner that is sensitive to these areas. So just to provide some additional information, we do have the ability, and they have agreed to provide technical or geotechnical reports on the site to confirm that basically no residence would be built on any site that could potentially be a sinkhole area. And we have the addition, we have the ability to require on each specific lot additional geotechnical reports, as well as roadways too. So not, I don't want anyone to think we'll be building on sinkholes, but it is in the area, and we do think that this is a manner in which to address it while still allowing the development of the site. In addition, trails, quite an extensive trail system, generally private, has been identified on the site. It does ring around generally the entire subdivision. They have also agreed to provide a connection to the Perchy Creek Trail, which could be constructed to the west of the site in the future. I'm not exactly sure what the timeline for that would be, but it would provide a substantial connection to the trail network for this subdivision and for surrounding neighborhoods. They are going to be working with our Parks Department to identify where that final trail connection could be in the future, but again, it is a little bit speculative right now as where that connection could be. And I'll point out, the trails shown on here would not be a city-maintained or owned. It would be HOA-maintained. A couple other things have come up this week upon further review by staff. So I would say that the recommendation that you have currently in your staff reports, I'm going to ask that it be amended. So I'll provide some additional information here in a second. One of those things identifies or is associated with a couple notes that are included on the plat. Number one, it's note 24. It requests that stop signs be added to the intersection of Louisville and Smith. At this point, we can't say that they wouldn't be there, but that is not something that needs to be addressed within a preliminary plat. Our engineering department, our public works department, will evaluate that at a future time to determine if that intersection requires stop signs. So we're asking them to take that off to remove any confusion on whether or not that intersection would have any type of stop signs. Similar with number 25, they're asking that the alignment for Smith Drive not conform to a major collector. That's something that would be addressed at the final planning stage, so we're asking that be removed and be evaluated by Public Works at a later date. So basically with all that additional information I just provided you, I'm going to give you an amended recommendation. Generally, that starts off with an approval, recommendation of approval of the R1 zoning as permanent zoning for the site, subject to the annexation of the property. The second part of that would be approval of the preliminary plat, subject to some additional technical corrections, but also to following to the following conditions. Those conditions are that City Council, again, approves the annexation and the development agreement associated with the site. That prior to this preliminary plat being forwarded to City Council, that the applicant revise the two cul-de-sacs that we discussed so that a connection is made. Number three, that notes number 24 and 25 are removed from the preliminary plat. And another one, which was just something we identified recently, and I'm sorry I didn't talk about this earlier, but number four is basically prior to being forwarded to City Council that the sanitary sewer location is reviewed and approved by staff. They've identified a couple locations where they felt may need to be amended, where the sanitary line is being shown. They're not comfortable with where they're showing. I would point out that most of the utility information there is preliminary. However, they don't want to approve a location that they know would not work, so they're asking that that be basically revised to reflect a better location, or the applicant provide additional information that it can work. So, and we spoke with the applicant about these. Generally, they're in agreement for all these conditions. We don't think these are dire enough to hold up the preliminary plat. It's something that probably can be accomplished prior to going to City Council. So, again, those are the two recommendations with the conditions associated with the preliminary plat. And I'd be happy to answer any questions. And I also have with me Jacob Ray from our traffic engineering department. So we do know when this came through before, there were concerns with traffic issues on Smith Drive. So we asked them to attend. It is a little bit unusual to request engineering to be here, but we thought it would be helpful in case there were additional questions about that.
Thank you, Mr. Smith. Are there any questions for staff? Mr. McMahon.
Yes. Planner Smith, just help me out a couple things. How much undeveloped ground is on this 90-acre lot? We've got 133, something like that.
It's about half about would half. Be placed in common lots. I think it's 47 acres approximately.
So these are 10, 12,000 square foot average lot size. That's what
I can't tell for certain. They're not required to provide specific lot.
I'm just
but if you did the math, you could probably come up with an average number, sure. I'd say that's an accurate representation.
Okay. Another thing, when this was originally approached, the Osage Nation were quite concerned and provided us a lot of information. Have they given us any other feedback on the site?
They have not. Technically, since this is a separate application,
and I appreciate that.
So we have not received any additional correspondence. Except for the two letters that I placed in front of your chairs today, we did receive correspondence from two neighboring homeowners associations in support of the request.
Okay, but the Osage Nation has not addressed again in any way. Can we go back to 128 and 129 where the variance is, where the intersection is? And you had said these six lots will share common drives. Is that correct?
There'll be shared drives for each two
They'll
lots.
They'll be paired.
Yes.
They'll be paired. And so approximately property line? I'll address some of that. Okay. And what's our slope here when we're like 128, 129, 130?
The grade is actually on the street. You can see directly north of 128. It's about a 3% slope.
Okay. That's what I thought I was reading. I'm just having a difficult time. Okay. Those are my questions at this time. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions for staff? Mr. Stanton.
I might be jumping the gun, but are we having two separate actions? How are we gonna vote on this? It seems like are we addressing both cases separately, or can we ball it up in one?
You could ball up in one if you'd like. I think it depends on if you feel like this preliminary plat needs to be separated out because of certain situations. It might be easier to vote on the zoning and get that done and then address the preliminary plat since there are additional conditions with it.
Any additional questions, Mr. Stanton? No, ma'am. Ms. Burns.
I had in our packet there was included a letter from Dean O'Brien, past dean of College of Arts and Sciences. Was that solicited by the applicant or by the city? I didn't know how we obtained that.
I obtained it from the applicant. I can't tell you if it was solicited by them, but they did submit it either on their behalf or somehow. But we did not solicit that. No.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Mr. Smith, I had one or two. You mentioned under the urban service area that it is a boundary where we look at infrastructure perhaps a little bit more closely when we step beyond that. Does that include schools?
I can't remember if that's specifically addressed, but someone is telling me to my left that no, that is not specifically addressed in one of the infrastructure issues. Generally, it's relegated to city services, municipal services that are provided, street, parks, sewer, water, electric, those types of things.
Also, we've looked at a request that came through recently that had some steep roads in it, and that was one of the concerns in the application. Do you know what the steepest slope is on the roads? I was seeing 7%. I was just wondering if
they should be reflected on the preliminary plat. I don't recall seeing anything that approached 10%. So anything 10% and below would be considered suitable or acceptable within the range. So 10% is the maximum that you can have. So, and I think if 7%, if that's what you saw, that sounds familiar. Yeah.
Thank you. Okay, now we would like to open the floor up to public comment. If anyone has comments they would like to make, please approach the podium and please state your name and give your address for the record.
Good evening. My name is Phoebe Lamar. I have offices at 111 South 9th Street. I'm here this evening on behalf of the applicant, and I'm going to try to address some things and also address some of the questions that were being asked, so it might be slightly disjointed, but hopefully it won't be too bad. My client is, as staff explained, seeking to develop the 90.8-acre tract that's located off of Smith Drive west of Scott Boulevard. In order to develop this tract, we're first requesting that the property be annexed into the city and be zoned R1. That is actually the equivalent of the RS zoning that is currently on the property in the county where it's currently located. You also probably recall that we were here in front of you about 6 months ago with a similar proposal, although it has changed substantially since then and is actually considered to be a new proposal. Since we withdrew that proposal, we've spent literally hours in meetings and conversations, exchanging emails, having all kinds of dealings with the neighbors who surround this property and the neighborhood associations. As a result, we made numerous changes to the proposal that you have in front of you this evening. We removed the PUD, which was one of the issues that the neighbors were concerned about. We incorporated additional screening. We removed about 40, actually I think in excess of 40 lots from what was originally proposed, and as a result, substantially reduced the density of the development. We incorporated traffic calming devices into the plat, which is part of what you're seeing in front of you. And if you look at the plat, one of the issues that was raised by city staff was with regard to Angel's Rest and Briar Rose and the connection of those two streets that's down at the bottom, toward the bottom, in what used to be the PUD section. And I'd just like to point out that there's a really good reason for having those as cul-de-sacs there that has absolutely nothing to do with topography, but has a lot to do with the infrastructure that serves this particular subdivision. If you go to Whitefish Drive, that's actually a 28-foot street, whereas Smith Drive is currently a residential width street, but is designed to be a collector road. As a result, the desire at this point and going into the future is to encourage traffic to use Smith Drive rather than to use Whitefish, where there are people parked on both sides of a 28-foot street. The reason for putting cul-de-sacs in this area is to encourage people to use Smith Drive. So if you connect those two cul-de-sacs, you're potentially encouraging a substantial number of people to, instead of using Smith Drive, which is designed for the traffic, to instead use Whitefish Drive, which is not designed for the traffic. So frankly, we were asked by city staff to connect those two cul-de-sacs, and we said, we can't do it. This is part of what the discussions with the neighbors were, where we need to discourage people from using Whitefish Drive. We need to control the traffic. There are other things that have been installed to calm the traffic and to slow it down on Whitefish, but frankly, this is a pretty important traffic calming device, using a cul-de-sac in this area rather than connecting those streets. So I would ask that you really think twice before you incorporate that comment as an exception from staff, and think twice before you try and require that on this plat, because honestly, that's one of the things that the neighbors in this area have really, really wanted, and that makes a lot of sense when you start looking at the sizes of the streets and those sorts of things. So just the reasoning behind the cul-de-sacs rather than connecting streets, I think it's an important reason. We also incorporated additional screening. There's screening between both of the neighborhoods that are on either side of this development that the neighborhood associations have reviewed and signed off on. We incorporated the traffic calming devices. We agreed to construct sidewalks. There's actually a Louisville park that's off-site, and one of the requests from the neighbors was that we construct sidewalks to access that park from the existing neighborhoods. And we've agreed that we're willing to do that, and we'll do that. That's part of the development agreement that we're signing with the city in order to provide access for not only our the people in this neighborhood, but also for the people in the other neighborhoods around it. We're also going to record conservation and trail easements on the property in order to show, in order to preserve the common areas and make the neighbors and other people comfortable that they're actually going to be used for what they're designed for on the preliminary plat. Following the changes, I'm actually happy to report that we have support from all three of the neighborhood associations who are around this area. You should have received, I believe, copies of letters from two of those neighborhood associations, the Greystone Neighborhood Association and the Quail Creek West Neighborhood Association. And actually, George Botek is here on behalf of Stone Ridge Neighborhood Association and is going to tell you that he's in support of this proposal at this point. So the good news is the discussions that we had with the neighbors were productive, and as a result, the people who are immediately surrounding this area are actually in favor of the proposal that you've got in front of you this evening. With the included green space in this development, the average density of the site is actually at the low end of the density that would be permitted in R1 zoning, which is the default for this property at annexation based on the current zoning. In addition, the green space being retained permits the addition of a trail and footpath that's shown on the proposed preliminary plat that will allow not only the residents of this neighborhood, but at the recording of the easements, also people from the surrounding areas to use this trail and potentially to use it at some point to access the Pershing Creek Trail when it's constructed. The green space and trail are not being donated to the city, so the city won't incur any additional cost. But there will be the easement permitting other people to use it. Since the trail isn't, I'll move on, sorry, I'm starting to repeat myself. There will be restrictive covenants in the development that will require a minimum of 1,400 or more square feet of living space in the homes located in the development, which is comparable to the homes in Quail Creek West. It will also require that the homes in the entire neighborhood have pitched roofs, that they will not permit vinyl siding, that they will require stone, brick, drive-it, or other similar products on the fronts, and that there will be other features that will make these nice homes on the outside. There are some topographical and other characteristics about this site that make it unique. There are some sinkholes on the site, which we've done a lot of testing to figure out where they are at this point, and which are required to be worked around before it can be developed. This has been done, and there are safeguards in place at this point that are acceptable to both the neighbors and the city staff. Tim will provide you with a little more detailed information about the sinkholes because that is not my area of expertise. There is also an Indian burial mound on the site that was mentioned to you by city staff. There was consultation done with the Osage Nation both before and after the last planning and zoning hearing. When we talked to them after the meeting 6 months ago, they asked us if they could come on the site. We told them yes. We were told that they were going to go on the site. We haven't heard a word from them since. I've left a couple of messages. I've never gotten any response. When we didn't get any response from the Osage Nation, we then went and talked to Mike O'Brien because he had originally done a survey that had shown this Indian burial mound a long time ago, back in the 80s, I think. And so we called him and talked to him and said, okay, what do we need to do? And he kind of said, well, first of all, I don't think it's an Osage Nation burial mound. I think it's another tribe. And secondly, the person you really need to talk to is me, not them. Because, you know, I actually deal with this stuff all over the state of Missouri. The University of Missouri is charged with keeping track of the artifacts from the state of Missouri and that sort of thing, and has a museum in which they place artifacts at the point that they are found and turned over to them, that sort of thing. So when we talked to Mike O'Brien, he provided, as a result of those meetings, and I mean, we went and walked to the site with him. Actually, I think Mike went and walked the site with him. I met with him. Tim met with him. We had several discussions with him. He provided the letter that you have in your packet and basically said, I think what you're doing is really a great thing. I think it's exactly what needs to be done to preserve this site. And by the way, I'm really excited about the fact that we might get some additional artifacts off of this particular property, because currently nobody can really get to the Indian burial mound to even see it. So I mean, I never knew it existed until I started talking about this property. So you've got an opportunity for people to learn about something that they wouldn't necessarily otherwise have a reason to learn about. And we've already agreed that if there are artifacts that are found in the course of developing this property, that we'll provide them to the University of Missouri. And that, you know, we don't need them, but other people might benefit from them by being able to see them and being able to learn from them as a result. So that's basically the process that's taken place at this point. And no, we haven't heard anything more from the Osage Nation. So the applicant has agreed to a development agreement with the city, pursuant to which the city is receiving contributions to off-site infrastructure in the amount of $125,000. In addition, there's going to be a payment of $127,100 towards extension of Broadway, if at some point it's extended, and right-of-way an additional pavement for a collector street on Smith Drive. The total amount of the infrastructure improvements, even beyond building the ordinary streets and sidewalks in this development, is nearly $300,000. So the fact is, we are addressing, to the extent that there are any infrastructure issues off-site, we are addressing those issues. One of the things that has been requested by the neighbors is the stop signs at Louisville and Smith Drive. We've agreed we're willing to put them up if the city will approve them. I guess they want the note taken off the plat. I guess we don't really care if that note is on the plat, but the reality is I can tell you that the neighbors in that area really want stop signs because they're very concerned that they won't be able to get out off of the streets in Stone Ridge, which are south on Smith Drive, if they don't have some kind of stop sign so that there's a little bit of break in the traffic for them to exit their streets. So whether it's a note on the plat or not, I know the neighbors are really wanting to have the stop signs installed there. Tim Crockett's going to speak to you next to provide you with a few additional specifics on the proposal. Mike Tompkins, who's the developer of the property, is also here if you have questions, and any of us are happy to answer any questions you have. Dan?
What is your response to the city's concern about through traffic? I mean,
about through traffic with regard
for
the
two cul-de-sacs connecting in your...
Both of them have the ability to get out. They're relatively short cul-de-sacs. They're well within the regulations for cul-de-sacs. And the fact is, they all have the ability to get out. Mostly, we need to point the traffic in the direction that it needs to go, which is toward Smith Drive rather than toward Whitefish.
Actually, if I can piggyback on that.
Sure.
Ms. Lamar, Angels Restway already connects to Whitefish, so there's already a through connection through to Whitefish.
There are through connections to Whitefish. The one, whichever one is the northern one, can get to Whitefish if that's the way that they want to go, but is more likely to go up to Smith Drive. And that's what the design is based around, is to try to encourage people to use the street that's bigger and more and better designed for the traffic.
They're talking about the potential of 11 lots going one direction versus another.
Well, you're talking about the potential for more than that, because if that street connects, then you may have other people who are going to use that way and try in order to try and get out.
But they could already go through on Angels Rest Way.
They can, yes.
Okay, thank you.
Sure. And when you talk about 11 lots, you're really probably talking about 22 cars, which is really talking about 44 trips a day, likely. So, I mean, you're talking about a pretty good number of people who are going to be potentially going a direction that isn't ideal for them to go.
If they're headed north.
Maybe.
Any other questions for Ms. Lamar? Mr. McMahon.
Thank you for providing me more detail with
no problem.
The Osage's, your contact with the Osage. You said any artifacts found during development will be provided to the appropriate agencies. Just to be clear, there's no plans to dig on this site?
There's no plans to do any type of archaeological dig.
That common site protection stays as is. I mean, we can bump that back up. Mr. Smith, can we put the mound?
Are you talking about in any plans to dig to dig in the mound? No, there's no plans to dig in that. That would be only on the remainder of the site.
Just to be clear, anything that was found. All right.
Yeah, no, the state regulations preclude you from disturbing what you think might be human remains.
That's
and
why
we have
I was trying
no
to be
intention
very,
of violating,
clear.
Violating right. that.
By the way, I like your cul-de-sacs. I think they're fine. thank you for clarifying that point.
Sure.
I have no questions, any more questions at this time.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you very much.
Madam Chairman, members of the Commission, Tim Crockett with Crockett Engineering, 2608 North Stadium. Thank you, sir. I'll be brief here. I'm going to go through my presentation. I believe the overview, I won't waste your time. I believe all the items in the overview have already been covered with 1.5 units per acre, 90-plus acres. I would like to talk about a few of the items, though, that were presented in the staff report regarding the Columbia Imagine, regarding basically open space and sensitive areas. I think that's a big topic here as well. Total area of the property, as mentioned before, is 90.8 acres. Total area of the proposed common lots is almost 48 acres. So over 50% of the entire piece of property is going to be preserved in open space, in common ground, in common ownership, not on individual lots. So that's substantial. There's not many other subdivisions that approach 50-plus percent of the property being preserved in common ground. The steep slope, that's always a concern. I think that was a concern that was brought up last time. The revised revised layout, the revised proposal has pulled a lot of development away from some of the steeper areas. And here's the, I'm sorry, it's kind of hard to see, but you can kind of, if you look close, you can see that our underlying lots, our underlying streets line in and around the sensitive areas there. Sensitive areas being what's in red, what's in orange, being more steeper areas, if you will. So the idea there is we're going to develop on the ridgetops, we're going to develop on the areas away from the extreme slopes on the piece of property and leave that portion as is. Again, that area is going to lie within the 52-plus percent of common area. Stormwater management, that was a comment that was brought up at the last time 6 months ago. Again, this site is going to be in full conformance with the City of Columbia stormwater regulations, both with regards to water quality and detention. So there should be no issue with that on the property. I believe Ms. Lamar talked about the trail network. Nearly 2 miles of private trails on this piece of property. If you know Mr. Smith, or excuse me, you know Mr. Tompkins, you know he is an avid hiker, an avid biker. He will be on any trail at any point in time. So if you're on any of the trails, you may run into him. He wants to push that into his developments as well. He believes it's a safe and healthy lifestyle. He wants to push that into the neighborhoods. He thinks that people want that and desire that. So he wants to put nearly 2 miles of private trail on the property at no cost to the City of Columbia. Again, the comment came up is, well, if you're going to put that in there, how come it's just for the residents? Well, it's not just for the residents. Anybody can use that in the public. So those private walking trails will be on, or excuse me, those privately maintained and paid for walking trails will be on property, but anybody in the neighborhoods surrounding this development can use it, as well as we're also going to have a trail network tie in to the future Perchy Trail. Site configuration, traffic flow. I think Ms. Lamar hit on that pretty good with regards to those two cul-de-sacs. We have worked tirelessly with the neighbors. We've been asked to go work with the neighbors. We've been asked to get their input, and we worked with those folks with many meetings, many emails, many phone calls, and the layout that they provided was actually provided to us. We incorporated their layout into ours. And it's not exactly what they provided us, but it was a good representation. So we wanted to be agreeable to the neighbors as best as possible and do everything we could to address their concerns, and that was the reason for the cul-de-sacs that was shown. One item here, if you can look, we had the original PUD layout, the revised PUD layout, and now this is the current R1 layout. So you can see what the intent and what the thought process was here. The original PUD layout had several connections that were close to Whitefish Drive. I believe it had about 80 units south of Smith Drive in that little section there. The revised PUD layout had about 85 units in there, I believe, 84 units in there. And then now the current R1 layout has about 50 or 55 units in there. So the idea there is we're trying to minimize or reduce the density in that section to help minimize the traffic flow onto Whitefish. We've also put some other traffic calming in there as well. We put in some divided streets. We put in some elevated speed tables, crosswalks, and the like to help mitigate and reduce traffic going onto Whitefish Drive. Again, I'll briefly talk about the edible landscaping concept. Mike's a big fan of this. He's working with the Columbia Center for Urban Agriculture. He wants all of his landscaping and his development to be edible. We're talking about fruit trees, plantings, strawberries, blueberries, all that. So he's done that in other developments, and it's turned out to be very, very attractive, and it's turned out to be a big hit. Neighbors love that when they can walk outside and pick their own snack. Other environmental and cultural impacts, we've talked about the Native American burial ground. Again, we have no desire to drill, dig, excavate anywhere close to the mound itself. We want to leave it in its native preservation. Mike actually wants to go in there and actually put a walking trail next to it, put a placard out there so the residents in the area can really understand what this mound in their neighborhood really is, and that they understand that they weren't the first residents of this piece of property, but rather a couple hundred years ago there were other residents as well. The sinkholes, that was a big concern at the last planning and zoning meeting. We have done extensive drilling on the property. We've done extensive research on the property and testing of the material to identify the sinkholes on the piece of property. We feel that we've got them narrowed down pretty good. It doesn't go to a big, large underground cavernous system. It's basically small cracks in the rock that discharge the water. The layout was revised. If you remember the original layout, we've taken some areas out and put it in green space in which that water, we believe, traverses underground. So we're going to leave that area undeveloped so that we're not developing on top of it. If you look on the preliminary plat, we have a sinkhole protection zone listed. Now, that's not the edge of the sinkholes. That's the area of the protection zone. That's where we don't want to put homes within that limit. The sinkhole itself is much further in. So I don't want to look at that and say, well, this dashed line on here is the sinkhole itself, because that's truly not the case. It's the protection zone. And really what it is, it's the highest close contour. City of Columbia has no regulations regarding protection of sinkholes. So what we did is we looked at other communities. We've looked at Springfield, Greene County, Taney County. We've talked to other counterparts in the southern part of the state where sinkholes are an everyday occurrence, and said, hey, how do you work around these? What are the protection zones that you use? And what's required by your city or your county? And so we talked to those folks. We incorporated that into our design. We worked with the folks at the city. So they looked at that and evaluated that, and they feel very comfortable with what we're proposing. We have done an extensive geotechnical report on this property. And then as construction takes place, we will have engineers out there the entire time during excavation so that we can evaluate the site all the time. We expect that we're going to do more drilling and more testing just for verification purposes. And we're going to provide all that information to the city as well. So we believe that we've addressed the sinkhole situation pretty well. Again, staff conditions regarding the cul-de-sac connection, we ask that your consideration to allow us to have that. The removal of the notes, we're fine with. The sewer relocation, we're fine with that as well. That was actually an item that came up just this morning, and so we're certainly fine with that as well. So the minor issues there on the staff comments, we don't have any problem with. We do ask, respectfully ask for the cul-de-sac situation. And so with that, again, conclusion, I won't go into all that. We've talked about that till we've beat a dead horse. But with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions that the commission may have.
Any questions for Mr. Crockett? I see none at this time. Thank you, Mr. Crockett. Are there any other speakers on this case? Or these cases? We're hearing both.
Good evening. My name is George Bartek. I'm the vice president of Stone Ridge Estates. That would be the subdivision directly to the east of this proposed development. I'm going to, again, reaffirm to all of you how much work this has taken between us, the developer, and the other folks I've gotten to know from the other two subdivisions, Greystone and Quail Creek. We have put uncountable hours in trying to come up to an agreement on this. And Phoebe and Tim make it sound like it was always harmonious. It was not. There was quite a lot of contentious debate, I'd say. There's a lot of give and take in this matter. And I have to admit, I've been educated as to this process as a result, and how, if you really want to work and defend something on behalf of your own neighbors, that most subdivisions are woefully inadequately prepared to come up before you guys, city council, and try to work out these matters. But as a result, we sat down with the help of some very good people, and we have reached an agreement here that satisfied all parties. I am shocked that we actually have reached this agreement, but like I said, it had a lot of give and take and a lot of good faith, and I've come to know these folks now, and I appreciate them. I would ask them for advice as to anything I need at this point. The cul-de-sac situation there, again, I have to reaffirm to you, that was done mainly in, for the concerns that the Greystone and Quail Creek folks had. And that's because Whitefish is a small road. You got two cars parked around there. You can barely get one car coming down between the two roads there. Kids play on the street. It's a winding street. It's not a straight street. It is really an exit that we were trying to discourage people to take. And I'm telling you this coming from Stone Ridge. It doesn't bother me at all. I have Smith Drive to worry about. But we walked up that street and know it very well, and they have a problem. We cannot have too much traffic coming down that road. So what we wanted to do was to encourage folks to come down Smith Drive, and the cul-de-sac design was specifically designed for that. Furthermore, we all like cul-de-sacs. That's what it comes down to. We like cul-de-sacs. They're appealing. They're nice. They work well, and we think they will in this subdivision. As a counter to trying to divert traffic from Whitefish, what we asked from Stone Ridge was to provide the stop signs both on the exit from Breckenridge and at Louisville. What Planning and Zoning probably hasn't told you is that what we've learned from this entire process is that originally Louisville was supposed to connect at Silverthorne, which sits a little higher up. I don't know if it shows on the map there. Yes.
So this is Louisville, and this is Silverthorne?
That's Silverthorne. So logically, you would have an intersection right there where you could have stop signs on both sides, and folks could just come on in. But that's not what we have. We have a turn when we come off Silverthorne where we look immediately to your right, and not 20 to 25 feet away, there's the exit from Louisville, which is somewhat busy at times because it gathers all the back traffic from Quail Creek as well as Georgetown, which come down to take the light on Smith. Additionally, it's going to create additional traffic coming straight down from Breckenridge. So if everybody had a stop there, it would definitely help us on pulling out and hanging that left. The problem usually is not right in our faces until right at the rush hour time, and that's when the problem hits because we got everybody piling into Smith from every side, and it's hard to take that turn sometimes. Another matter you need to be aware of is that as you come to that intersection, there is a hill on Smith. So when we're turning that left off Silverthorne to get to the light on Scott, you're looking up a hill. So these cars come flying down Smith, which is naturally a rather big road, which we do believe is the appropriate road to gather most traffic there. And we have trouble pulling out left. We're going to have a terrible wreck there at some point when somebody's going to pull out and somebody's going to be coming too fast over that ridge. What we'd like to do is for the folks coming to our right to have to come to a stop, which most of them note at the current yield sign that we have at Louisville. And if they'd come to a stop, we'd have that break where we get a chance to pull in. And again, this, as I've discussed with all the folks here, this is really not a problem except during that prime time hour, somewhere between 7:30 to 9 o'clock. And it's just everybody's going into town to work at that time. So, again, the cul-de-sac design for the Whitefish, I encourage you not to, I don't really want that there. I suspect it would be a deal breaker with my neighbors from Quail Creek and Greystone because they work so hard to try to get traffic to be diverted towards Smith. I also am not in agreement, and I kind of wish Tim would have addressed this matter, as to, again, the city planner's insistence upon calling Smith a major collector. It was not designed to be a major collector. It's a neighborhood collector. It collects neighborhoods. It is not a major collector. Yet, time and time again, we did this the last hearing we had here. They came in and say, we want to call it a major collector with just a write of a pen. Well, what improvements are you going to do to make it a major collector? What defines it as a major collector? It was designed as a neighborhood collector. People bought their homes there because they thought it was a neighborhood collector. And now CATSO came up as we started this whole negotiation here. We find out, oh, CATSO now wants to make us the new Gillespie Bridge Road. Well, we turned around and said, no, that's a bad idea. So off we go. We wrote out numbers of letters off to CATSO. Got our city councilmen involved in the matter. They went to CATSO and told CATSO, this is a bad idea. It's not within Columbia imagined. Broadway's always been the planned road to shoot over to UU. Why are you now all of a sudden coming down to Smith? So then they say, oh, we just won't vote on it at this point. And furthermore, as our councilman pointed out, there's no money to do that anyhow. So I, again, would object to the fact of labeling Smith a major collector, and I also ask that you consider it built to the specifications the developer came up with, not what the city planning is suggesting. Again, it is troublesome to me that my planners, again, are coming up with that same issue that we had the first time, kind of as a fly in the ointment. So I strongly hope that you would support the planning as we've done it with the developer at this point. I never imagined sitting on a board of a homeowners association that we developed, giving so many pro bono hours to something like this. It has been truly stunning. The hours count into the hundreds. So it's been a lot of hard work to get to this point. I would highly suggest that, again, give you my support of it. I know my other neighbors do. You can see their letters. And if any questions, I'm willing to answer them.
Are there any questions for this speaker? Mr. McMahon.
As a former resident of Georgetown, I appreciate your desire for the stop signs coming on Smith, because at those times it is a problem, and the concerns on Whitefish. I just, but as far as the status of Smith, that's, I'm not a traffic engineer, but I do know it's hard to make that left that you're describing right there. And Whitefish should have no more traffic on it. I appreciate that it has to connect, you know, for emergency services.
And right, there's a safety issue there.
But it's a safety, but it's about at max as we speak.
That is correct.
That's just a commentary.
That's a fact.
It's not really a question. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions for this speaker? I see none at this time. Thank you very much for your comments.
Thank you.
Are there any other speakers that wish to approach the podium at this time? Seeing none, I'm going to close the public comment period. Comments of the commission. Ms. Rushing.
Since I was not happy with the previous proposal, I want to thank everybody for the hard work they put in on this. I like the creative approach to the substantial problems that exist in this particular piece of property, and I like the way that they have dealt with those problems. So thank you very much.
I feel the same way. I think it's an improvement over the previous plan, and I like all the aspects of it as well. It seems like it has a lot of, at least I'm seeing some evidence of support from adjoining neighborhoods and stuff, so I plan to support it as well.
Ms. Burns.
I also plan to support this. One thing I wanted to ask staff about is, again, the cul-de-sacs. It seemed I heard the word deal breaker used as far as, and I understand from both sides, but since this was a very hard brokered deal, thoughts on that? Additional thoughts on that?
Sure. Yeah, I would absolutely acknowledge that. I think there's two different objectives with that design. I think the objective for the design as shown is to address neighborhood concerns, and we can appreciate that. I think that's understandable. I think from a technical side, from our side, from a planning side, there's a specific objective in making the connectivity too. That's kind of a larger picture type issue. Their objective is to try to facilitate traffic to the north to Smith, which you know, I think there are concerns with individuals that live on Whitefish with traffic. But I would say that it's designed exactly the same as all the other residential streets within the subdivision. It's not narrower than any other roadways. The more options we provide people, the better traffic flow is. This seems like a very small thing in the context of just this one cul-de-sac, but if you look at it as a bigger picture, that connection allows people the choice to, for whatever reason, to go different directions, so facilitate better traffic flow. And also, like I said, better service delivery. So there's practical cost-saving things that account for that type of thing. But we definitely understand that this isn't being done to really circumvent that. It's being done to address concerns with neighbors, to kind of help that. I think the public kind of accept what they are proposing out there as far as annexing and subdivision. So our recommendation is going to stay the same, but we understand where that concern is coming from.
Thank you.
Russell.
I'm going to echo how nice it is to see all of these parties get together and approve this. And with respect to the city planners, I agree with the cul-de-sacs. If the neighborhoods decided that this is what they want, then I'm going to support that and support this recommendation.
Thank you, Ms. Russell. Mr. Smith, I think I had a question on the variance that wasn't in our packet on notes 24 and 25 on the stop sign. And Smith alignment. There's been talk around that. I understand those would be acceptable to the party proposing it.
Correct. Just,
well, were there any further comments or?
Yes.
It sounds like it is a point of interest still.
I would say that we wouldn't necessarily preclude the installation of stop signs. I would defer to my traffic engineer colleague on that, but it's not appropriate to put them on the preliminary plat. We shouldn't be conditioning or putting a condition that the city has to install them without basically going through the proper evaluation of that site. So it's not something, intersection control is not something you typically place on a preliminary plat. I think they're doing that as an illustrative note in recognition, I think, of what they had agreed to propose to the city in that agreement with the neighborhood associations. But at this point, we don't think that's appropriate to put on there. So we understand, what they're doing, but it's something that needs to be evaluated separately by our engineering and public works.
So the city acknowledges there's some issues going on at those locations, and it will be addressed.
Yeah, I mean, on every subdivision, we always look at the situation and, you know, determine if there's stop signs needed at intersections or, you know, we go in after the fact and put in the street name signs, and if there's a curve that needs to be signed or some other form of signage, we will do after the fact. And so it's just it's our opinion that it's not appropriate for the preliminary plat.
Thank you. Ms. Russell.
I have another. Could you go back to the screen with the notes 24 and 25? Okay, thank you.
Any other comments?
I'll give it a shot. In the case of, and we can do these together, correct?
Please do them as two separate.
Yes. Two separate, okay. In the case of 16-178 Breckenridge Park annexation. Where am I?
Just the first one.
Half of Tompkins Development Incorporated, subject site is located at the wet. Oh gosh, now I've messed it up. Okay, recommend approval of the R1 as permanent zone upon annexation, and then we'll address the other issues in the second motion. Okay.
Second.
Ms. Burns made the motion. Mr. Stanton seconded. Can we get a vote?
Yes, Ms. Russell.
Yes.
My vote is yes. Ms. Lowe?
Yes.
Mr. Harder?
Yes.
Mr. McMahon?
Yes.
Mr. Stanton?
Yes.
Ms. Rushing?
Yes.
That's seven in the affirmative, zero denying. Motion carries.
Thank you, Ms. Burns. So recommendation for approval for annexation will be forwarded to City Council. Now we need a vote on case 16, or a motion on case 16-179, which is the approval of the preliminary plat. Would anyone care to take a stab at that?
I'll take a stab at that one.
Thank you, Ms. Russell.
In the case of 16-179, I motion to approve the preliminary plat for Breckenridge Park, subject to the technical corrections and the following conditions. That City Council approves the annexation and development of the agreement associated with the site, and prior to City Council consideration, sanitary sewer location is approved by the staff. I am intentionally leaving out the
notes 24 and 25.
notes 24 and 25, and I think the cul-de-sacs need to remain the same. So
I'll second that motion.
Point of clarification. So notes 24 and 25 are being removed?
Are not removed.
Are not removed.
No, they get their stop sign.
I would advise the commission that an application of an engineered standard that requires traffic control devices to be determined based on the need is appropriate to have that removed. It is a traffic control device and manual related issue. To put traffic signs in locations where they are not appropriate is actually a disservice to the public and may create a greater safety hazard. That is why it is being requested to be determined by our engineering staff at the time of evaluating the impacts of the project. Your motion, however, is consistent with what you would like to do. We'll have to deal with that. But that is the reason why those notes are being asked to be removed, as well as if the note as it relates to the design of the street is not removed, you are by default granting a variance to our standard specifications for street design, and we would prefer to not have that stated on the plat.
All right, then I will add the notes number 24 and 25 are removed pending the street study.
We had a second by
Mr. My second McMahon. Stance. My second, all right, add it again.
May we have a vote, please?
Yes. Ms. Russell?
Yes.
My vote is yes. Ms. Lowe?
Yes.
Mr. Harder?
Yes.
Mr. McMahon?
Yes.
Mr. Stanton?
Yes.
Ms. Rushing?
Yes.
That's 7 in the affirmative, 0 to deny. Motion carries.
Thank you, Ms. Burns. Recommendation for approval of the preliminary plat with the modifications as noted will be forwarded to City Council. Moving on to, so we're going to bundle the last two cases as well, I'm assuming, 16-196 and 16-197? Yes. A request from JR2 Development LLC to annex land into the city and designate R1, one family dwelling district, as permanent city zoning. The 28.84-acre property is located on the west side of Highway PP. Actually, I'm going to take a, do we need another break, Mr. Zenner, for our sign interpreter?
We're okay.
All right, thank you. To resume, 28.84-acre property is located on the west side of Highway PP and is addressed 3891 North Highway PP. It's also case 16-197, which is a request by JR2 Development LLC for approval of a 78-lot preliminary plat of R1, one-family dwelling district, zoned land, pending approval of the concurrent request for annexation and zoning. The 28.84-acre subject site is located on the west side of Highway PP and is addressed 3891 North Highway PP. May we have a staff report, please?
Yes, you may, Madam Chairman and Commissioners. 28.84-acre tract of land here, located on the west side of Route PP. We are looking at a combination, as we have just described, rezoning request for permanent city zoning of R1 single family and then a 78-lot preliminary plat, which would consist of single family houses as well. The oblique aerial of the property and the driveways to the north of the house in the northwest east corner is actually not on this site. And then we have an existing residential subdivision that's inside the city's corporate limits to the west of the project, undeveloped land to the south, and agricultural land both to the east and to the north. Panoramic photograph of the intersection of Route PP and Mexico Gravel Road in the lower portion of this graphic, showing that the site, which is further to the north of this intersection, is still entirely an agricultural tract of land. At this juncture, this is the proposed subdivision layout that is being discussed this evening. This particular request consists of, again, the R1 zoning, and there's not a whole lot to discuss about its actual permanent zoning. It is consistent with the adjacent city zoning to the west. This property is currently zoned AR within the city or within the county, which is a 2.5 acre minimum lot size and generally allocated toward agricultural type uses. This is a standard single family development of consistent lot sizes to what we have to the west of the property itself. As you can see, it has a single access point that is off of Highway PP in the southeast corner of the property, and then it has a connection along its western boundary to an existing stub street into the western subdivision off of Webster Grove Road, and this connection is would be completed as is required by our current subdivision regulations. You'll notice the highlighted green area that is in the center of this. This is the stream buffer and the tree preservation area. It is going to be placed on its own separate common lot, which would be consistent with our UDC requirements in the future. And then you will notice that there is a red circle that is in the northeast corner of the property, and that is a suggested stub street location. We generally, when you have developed or undeveloped property and you have the ability to provide stub street connections, we provide it to the undeveloped portions of the property. You have in your packet a letter from the applicant's engineer indicating why that stub street has not been provided. This is a area of disagreement between the staff and the applicant. There does not appear to be any practical difficulties associated with this being placed here based on an evaluation of the topography and other conditions associated with the site. So we will get to that here also within the staff report. Again, this is a pending annexation request for the November 21st council agenda. The annexation component of this would be considered by the council at that point. It is outside of our urban service area at this point, not unlike our Breckenridge project that we just completed. And that will obviously become a potentially a greater conversation as it relates to the annexation of this property. The R1 zoning, which is the element of this request and the portion of the annexation that is the purview of the commission, is consistent, as I've indicated, with the adjacent city zoning as well as with the general county zoning that surrounds this. There is, as we pointed out within the staff report, sewer availability issues at this point to get sewer to the site, and that is a relevant factor as it relates to being located outside of our urban service area. However, as the staff report also indicates, the applicant has received preliminary approval or tentative approval for the construction of a force main that would provide adequate sewage transmission to a manhole that is located off of Mexico Gravel Road at the intersection of Wyatt Lane to provide flow for the sewage that would be created within this 78-lot development, and then potentially accommodate development further to the south should and when that property decides to either annex into the city or develop. There has been discussion with the adjacent property owner. Learned of this just this evening that there is no opposition from the southerly property owner to the development of the 78 lots. The original design of the sanitary sewer that would be basically providing connection to the manhole at Wyatt and Mexico Gravel was intended to go along Highway PP, and instead, as part of the conversation and discussions with the adjacent property owner to the south, a realignment of that sewer would potentially travel to the western property line of the subject site and down the western property line of the adjacent property owner to the south, providing an opportunity for that property owner to have a better connection and potentially a shorter distance for the public sanitary sewer that would be run. So the connection of utility service exists to a system that does not have a capacity limitation. This site is served by a 16-inch water line that is off of Highway PP, so there is no fire flow issue associated with it, and it is in the Boone Electric service territory, and electric is not a limiting factor either for the development.
Oops.
Again, the proposed lots are similar in size to what we have in Maryland Heights, which is the city's subdivision to the west. The sensitive areas that were identified in the green swath in the middle of the subdivision are being protected within that centrally located common lot. And then access to Highway PP and Webster Grove and the southern stub has been provided. However, there has been no northern stub provided, which is a standard action that we typically see within our subdivisions when you have undeveloped property adjacent to your property. You would stub a road to that in order to facilitate the ability for interconnection. Again, another topic that we discussed this evening as it related to the Breckenridge project for connectivity. There is no variance being requested on that. There is not a specific obligation that such be provided. So keep in mind that is a observation of staff. It is something that we facilitate through our regulatory structure. And often when it is possible, we have those stub streets provided. We are recommending approval of the R1 zoning request as part of the annexation process, and that would be its permanent zoning. We are also recommending approval of the 78-lot preliminary plat, subject to the addition of that stub street to the site's northern property line, generally in its northeastern corner, where the subdivision already had an eyebrow cul-de-sac located in that particular corner of the site. If you have questions, I'll be more than happy to answer them. We would like to take two motions on this, please.
Thank you, Mr. Zinner. Are there any questions for staff? Seeing none, I'd like to open this up to the public comment portion. If anyone has information that they'd like to add to the discussion, please come forward and state your name and address for the record.
My name is Keenan Simon. Address is 1901 Pennsylvania Avenue. I work for McClure Engineering Company here in Columbia. I'd just like to thank you for your time this evening, and I'd also like to thank the city staff that has helped us through this process. Our vision statement at McClure is building stronger communities, and we support JR2's plan to provide Columbia with a responsible and green development. The central location of that site, we are in negotiations with the City Parks Department. We plan on making that a neighborhood park, public park. We'll have a trail system with that as well. In regards to the stub road to the north, I had sent out a packet of information in regards to why we believe that a stub road is irrelevant. And this pertains to the estate lots, roughly 6 to 7 lots all to the north that have homes on them. Along with that, there is a stream buffer that goes in kind of right through the middle of all those estate lots, which really prevents those lots from being developed. With that, it would pretty much limit anyone from moving forward to make that a residential development. With that said, I'm here for any technical questions you might have, and that with, let me know.
Questions for Mr. Simon. Mr. McMahon.
Director Zinner, could you pop up that, give me a little further out so I can see what he's talking about to the north there? Thank you. You can see this, sir. Could you say what you, explain what you just meant? That stub, basically you're saying that stub is only going to open up a few more lots for any future development to anyone to the north. Is that what you just said?
No, I mean, what I was stating was that those lots to the north are mainly estate lots, 5-acre tracts mm-hmm. with home sites, and my thought is, and what I had an argument with that I wish I had to display because it kind of shows where the stream buffer, the main draws of the property to the south that we are proposing the development to, drains, and it kind of winds back and forth. And with the city ordinances with stream buffers, it really limits that area from ever being developed, or it would be very difficult for the future development through that, not only with the estate lots that are currently there that will probably remain there in the future.
So let me just ask you just a quick follow-up question. Sure. If you were to provide a stub in there, you'd lose a lot, right?
Not necessarily. But it just seems to be undesirable from the property owner to the north when speaking with them, and also doesn't really enhance our development anyway.
Pardon my memory here, but they have not spoken in support or detraction of a stub?
The property owner to the north is here this evening, and I believe they will speak.
That's all I have. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. McMahon. Any other questions for this speaker? I had one question, Mr. Simon. You have a stream buffer on this property as well.
Yes, that's correct.
Thank you.
Okay.
Are there any other speakers on this case?
Charles Lose, 3021 North Highway PP. There is a traffic issue on PP already. I guess one question is, will they put a turn lane in off of PP into that subdivision? Are we not going to do that? And how much eruption are they going to have once they go down PP with the sewer line in people's yards and driveways?
Maybe staff can help us with those questions.
And there is a sewer issue on Thompson. That pump station is full, which pumps into part of what they're going to. It all leads down to Hingston Creek. If they're going to do this, I'd like to see a flow meter put in that Hingston Creek line and see what the capacity is before the decision is made. My understanding is that's just an 8-inch line down through Hingston Creek here. I could be wrong.
Any comments from staff on this?
I will defer on the traffic to Mr. Ray, and then as it relates to the sewer, Mr. Lois and I had a conversation earlier this afternoon. We have received correspondence from our sewer utility that the connection down or to the what would be to the southwest to Wyatt and Mexico Gravel to that existing sanitary line does have adequate capacity. We can request what the flow rate may be. I'm no sewer expert, so I can't tell you. I just know it runs downhill. And as far as running out on Highway PP, based on the correspondence between the Bells, which are the property owners to the south, and that from Keenan, it would appear as though the sanitary line will not be running out on PP as extensively as it was originally contemplated, which would have been taking it down to the curve at Mexico Gravel and then taking it west on Mexico Gravel. Now, we will have, if it does come down, as I understand the correspondence that we received late this afternoon, it is possible that that sanitary line will come along the southern property line to the western property line of the Bells and then run down that western property line. It will, when it makes the turn to go on to Mexico Gravel, it will affect possibly the lots that you see here as it gets to Wyatt, which is off of the map. That is a linear utility improvement, not uncommon to other linear utility improvements we make. It'll have to be repaired. Any damages that are done as it relates to driveways or the property would have to be repaired accordingly. That'll all have to come in through a construction permitting process, obviously, but the impacts to the Route PP, based on what we have received here today, is likely to be significantly reduced. And Keenan may be able to come up and speak to you directly as to where that lift station will be going within the development in order to be able to service what's being proposed. As far as for traffic, I will let Mr. Ray speak to that as it relates to his area of expertise.
Sure. For those who don't know, Highway PP is a MoDOT-maintained roadway, and I know the applicant has been working with MoDOT to find a safe location for the proposed street, and they've met out in the field, and they've nailed that down. MoDOT's never expressed any concerns regarding the potential of a left turn lane being necessary there and any of the correspondence that they've had.
That is a 55-mile zone, though, correct?
I believe so, correct. Yes.
Yes. So, and this would be adding a connection back to, is it Webster?
That is correct. Webster Grove is where it would be connecting on the west.
So not only is it adding this development, but it's connecting another through street into the development on the east.
Given the design of the subdivision with the curvilinear street network, it is not a direct connection. The majority of the traffic, obviously, that's over in Maryland Heights flows back towards Thompson to Wyatt. I don't believe this would be used as a cut-through. All of the services that are desired from the Maryland Heights property are to the southwest. Therefore, you'd go out of your way to get there. I would like to point out there is additional road right-of-way with this plat being provided in order to accommodate potential future upgrades associated with Highway PP should they be necessary at a point in the future that would warrant that. Mr. Ray comes to us from MoDOT and the local office, and I would imagine that if a demand or something comes up at some point in the future, the city as well as MoDOT would probably be coordinating to figure out how to maybe address that. At this point, the traffic volume doesn't really probably warrant any additional improvement.
That is correct.
Mr. McMahon.
I had a follow-up question. The gentleman had mentioned, and if you don't know, that's fine. I can ask Dave at some other time. That is an 8-inch sewer line serving that generalized area as it runs down.
I believe that is correct. I don't believe that the email had that specifically in it, but I believe
I've
seen it.
We probably don't know the age of that device. I mean, you may know, sir, about when that went in.
I do not have email.
I'll get up with Mr. Sorrell on that. Thank you, though. Thank you, Director Center.
Any additional questions for Mr. Lowe's? Thank you, sir, for your comments.
The concern is the driveway coming out on PP will be real close to mine. I'm east of there, right there.
That's your home here?
No, my home's up. My driveway is this way, right there.
You mentioned, Mr. Smith, you mentioned in the previous case that because there was a extension to the urban service area that traffic study had been done. Was there one done with this project as well?
Threshold for traffic studies is generally an increase in the peak traffic volume. This project did not trigger that increase in the traffic. So 100 trips within the peak hour it would have to be generated, and Breckenridge being 130 lots created that, as well as its general location on other capacity streets. So no, the answer to the question is no, there was no traffic study. There was none required. And it is not solely related to the purpose of an urban service area extension. That is not the rationale for traffic studies. Traffic studies are based upon the increase in peak hour traffic.
Does MoDOT, since PP is a MoDOT controlled vehicular way, do they consider locations of driveways and entrances onto that?
Absolutely. They follow all guidelines from the AASHTO Green Book, taking into account speed of the road, grade of the road, sight distance. And so Mr. Simon can probably speak to what happened at their meeting, but they met, if they followed what normally happens, they met out in the field and took a stake and basically went up and down the road to find the best spot that had the best sight distance.
And if Mr. Lowe's has additional concerns, what's his best venue to pursue those?
The permitting process for any street is a dual process, since this is a state route, as well as it will have a city connected street to that state route. It's the state permit will be required in order to work within the state's road right of way, and then our permit is also required for that connection, which is predicated on the state issuing theirs. Since the state has jurisdiction over the roadway, it would be my recommendation that the jurisdiction is state as it relates to the impacts that the incoming and outbound traffic may create. I hate to say that, but that's exactly, the state's the one that controls the location, not us. If this was internal to a city street such as Smith Drive, we'd be the one controlling where that location would be, and we'd be the responsible entity.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm not sure this commission has that much say over right. those connections, but it sounds like there's several parties involved, and I'd make your voice known.
The only other thing I can say is nobody contacted us prior to this. Thank you.
Noted. Thank you for your comments.
Keenan Simon, 1901 Pennsylvania Avenue, Clark Engineering.
Yeah, in regards to the MoDOT entrance onto Highway PP, we met with John Kuhlman, who is the regional MoDOT representative. We measured all the site stopping distances, and he selected that location as being the one that was most appropriate for the development, and that's where we chose that route. In regards to the sanitary sewer, the impact of the disturbed area along Highway PP is going to be altered. We have reached an agreement with the property owner to the south to allow for a sanitary easement on the west property boundary so that we can take that force main outside of the utility corridors that are on Highway PP and try and limit the amount of property that is disturbed in regards to the front yards in that right of way. We worked with Dave Sorrell and Lindsay Schaefer at the city for the sanitary issues. We actually dealt with them for 4 or 5 months and tried to come up with multiple solutions. Currently, where our tie-in point is at Wyatt Lane, that is an 8-inch line that collects 30 to 40 homes and then eventually ties into a 10-inch main. The capacity of that line is roughly 10 to 20% with the homes that are there, and with us tying into their manhole at that location, we would approximately increase that another 20 to 30%. So they would be at 50, 55% of what the capacity is of an 8-inch gravity line.
Any additional questions? Thank you, Mr. Simon.
Thank you.
Any additional speakers on this matter?
My name is Chris Lockwood. My wife and I own the property just north of there, 3901 North Highway PP. And I'm fairly against it. We just bought the property a little over a year ago, and we bought to be out in the country, basically, and still be close to town within stepdaughter or daughter school district, but still be out in the country. Otherwise, I mean, I don't own the property under or that property south of us, so I understand they can. I don't have control over it, but I am concerned about the stub street. We just learned about this Tuesday, I think it was. They came out and talked to us, and originally they had talked about it in the northwest corner, but where the proposed one is on the map tonight is just south, well, just south or just below our lagoon, basically below our house. And that kind of concerns me, and I don't know any, have any basis on this, but about my property value. If a potential buyer is going to buy, I mean, I guess they would have control of the property, but are they going to wonder why there's a street going to be going through the property? And I guess, I mean, if they're buying next to a neighborhood, but still, that's kind of a concern. But, and I have another concern about, because the, where the woods are, that's a creek. And my pond is, there's a, I would say, I didn't measure it, but I would say it's a 24-inch culvert there, and all the runoff goes down in there. Now, supposedly they've told me they're putting a retention pond there, so there won't be any more runoff. It's controlled, but I still worry about that, even especially during construction, about erosion of my pond dam or anywhere in there through that culvert. So, about all I have.
Thank you. Are there any questions for this speaker? Is Mr. Pond, Harder.
Is the pond, is I see the two, it looks like I see the lagoon, but the
right
pond
in the
is
middle.
Actually back the, there.
Yeah, okay. That's my okay. pond right there.
And so the water, the runoff from pretty much the area that they're using as green space.
Yes, and see just south of that, that kind of white little, that's the drainage right through there. And there's a, it's about a 18 to 24 inch pipe, but that's, it's already kind of starting to erode right there anyway, but I'm just worried about during construction or anything like that, if it's all cleared off and then a big rain comes or something like that, it's all going to end up right down in there in that culvert.
And is that a kind of a man-made pond, or is that a kind of a natural
man-made?
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Jim Krugman, I'm one of the partners of JR2 Development. Hadn't planned on speaking tonight, but I thought it would be relevant to address the subject that we're talking about at the moment, and that's the stub road to the north. Fox Creek is going to be a community development that's developed responsibly. And I apologize if we didn't communicate as frequently or as quickly with neighbors as perhaps we should have. But I feel like we've engaged these folks and tried hard, just like the previous development did, to listen to their needs, to listen to their concerns, and try to address them. We are going to build energy and environmentally friendly homes there, LEED designs that are approved through that process. We're going to be addressing or focused on working families. Our target total project sale price is $150 to $210. So we're a very logical extension of our neighbors to the west. I'm very happy with the arrangement we've made to the Bell, with the Bells to the south. We're developing, let's say, a trust relationship with the Lockwoods. Mr. Lockwood was just here, our neighbors to the north. And I think it's just as important with us to take in the neighbors' desires through this process as it is perhaps what staff would like to see sometimes. There is no reason whatsoever to put a stub road to the north when you have six estate homes already there and very limited buildable ground in the first place. I've assured the Lockwoods that we'll provide them the screening that they want. I've assured them that we'll be good neighbors. We've talked about the possibilities of a number of different things, but I'm asking you to approve our request without the stub road pointing at the Lockwood property. Thank you.
Any questions for this speaker? Mr. Harder.
I have one question.
Sure.
The previous gentleman had mentioned his pond, and I was just kind of curious if any kind of a study was done as far as any kind of an increase of water that would, you know, potentially flow in his direction due to the construction, stuff like that.
Well, I think Keenan would be the best one to address that. But in general, we're not allowed to discharge water any quicker, any faster than it does right now. And so the design of the water retention facilities will ensure that. But if it requires additional riprapping, if it requires a culvert replacement, if it requires us to do some things in conjunction with the Lockwood's concerns, we're happy to do that. I admit we're not far enough along in those discussions to have clarity around what exactly needs to happen, but certainly the intent is there.
Great. Thank you.
Any additional questions? Thank you, sir. Are there any other speakers that would care to make comments on this case?
Carolyn Lowe, 3821 North Highway PP. My concern is the trees and the animal life and the wildlife out there. We have deer that come through that particular part of the land all the time. They cross PP, they come up into our land, they go back in the other woods. They have a circle that they make through there. They also go behind that big subdivision over there, too. There's also foxes. There's all kinds of other wild animals. There's geese up there in the pond all the time. And all this is going to change if you put 78 houses out there and all these people. They're going to run them off because those animals are not going to go out there where there's people out there running around all the time. And this is not, I've had nobody else say anything about wildlife out there whatsoever. And we are out in the country, as they say, or out of the city. You bring the city out there, you're going to have people everywhere. You're going to have more traffic. You're going to have more cars up and down the road. The deer are not going to cross and take a chance to get killed crossing the road where they do now. I think this is something that should be considered. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions for this speaker? Thank you. Any additional comments? If not, I'm going to close the public hearing portion of this and comments of the commissioners. It's a pensive group at this point. Okay.
I'll go ahead and speak. This is tying in to the west of another, I guess, pretty large subdivision. It's called, is it called Garden City or something? Is that
Maryland Heights?
Maryland Heights. So it is kind of, it'll be adjacent to that one as well too. I was just kind of curious. I saw that it was tying into another subdivision, but I was kind of curious how big that subdivision was. No, just in general. I guess
the split there kind of shows.
Yeah, it was kind of hard. I mean, I could see maybe one or two, one road
there's,
over. But
there's definitely more lots in the subdivision to the west.
Mr. Simon, can you give your name and address
again?
Sorry,
Keenan Simon, 1901 Pennsylvania Avenue.
Yeah, I was just kind of curious. Basically, I wasn't able to see it on the map of how large that subdivision was that it would be adjacent to.
And it continues west as well. In regards to the stormwater question, we're not allowed to discharge anything more than done with the property. In regards to impervious area can be added, but we do have to detain it so that we release at the same rate. The concerns of increasing the stormwater runoff shouldn't be.
Any additional comments? Any comments on the stub road?
Stub road's not particularly popular. And if I may continue, I'm not sure about the connectivity given what's there now. We have a homeowner that owns a significant portion to the west. I know nobody knows what anybody's plans are, what your plans are. But I don't know that that stub road would ever provide. I don't know. I'm having a difficult time with the stub road where it is now. I understand for connectivity why it's placed in a new development, but I can't. Nobody has a crystal ball to know how it would increase connectivity in the future.
Well, you're making use of a stub road at the moment in this proposal off of Webster. So that requirement is benefiting this future use. Columbia Imagine does ask for interconnectivity between development so that neighborhoods continue to grow together versus being developed as isolated pods. We had a proposal come through not long ago that had it actually maintained some of its stub roads out to the streets, we could have approved it. And it was a difficult site, and because of the limited connectivity was one of the reasons that we rejected the future proposal. So I think the fact that this is a difficult or potentially difficult site, it could actually be advantageous should someone wish to develop it in the future to have future connections on that side of it and not depend on PP necessarily.
Follow up on that.
Yes, Mr. McMahon.
Thank you very much, Lee. The site we were referring to in your discussion, that had a lot of topography that was a serious problem. There are only so many places it could go. This site is a little more flexible. Are the stubs a deal breaker here? Does this kill anything, not having these stubs or having these stubs?
I think Ms. Lowe has accurately indicated on behalf of staff its rationale for why we have stub street criteria. And again, we acknowledge, as in the Breckenridge project, that what is not shown here was shown in reaction to trying to work with the adjacent neighbors, given the pending improvement of the property, which is maybe not as desirable as the existing land use. We do believe, though, that connectivity is important. You will note that on this graphic, they have provided connectivity to the south, like we would typically see for undeveloped land. And again, I will use the term undeveloped. I respect what the adjacent property owners have indicated and what the applicant and the Mr. Simon has indicated, that the northern property is developed today. And that needs to go into your weighing of your options as to estate lots being converted. As Ms. Lowe pointed out, we don't know what the future may hold. Those lots could be. I would say if you take a look at a broader aerial view of this property from this, and you will notice that the lots that we are speaking of, I have two mice here on the desk, and I always think that I hit the wrong one. If you look at this collection of lots and you look at the road network that surrounds it, you have North Thompson, you have PP. If this were to redevelop, connectivity to the south is definitely desirable because it does allow for an internal connection between Thompson and PP. It does serve a benefit. But when you look at it, if this entire acreage were to redevelop, there is the ability for connection either to Thompson, to PP. It's all subject to how it redevelops. The southern parcel is a little bit more challenged, that it does not really have any connection to the west. Therefore, the southern connection into the proposed development does provide you a way to get back out on Webster Grove westward. Otherwise, all of your connections on the Bell property would have to go south or east. At this point, you have two roadway networks that are large roadways. An internal road is definitely preferred from our perspective. Is it practical? Is it consistent with what maybe has been negotiated with the neighbors? Practical? Probably yes. That is our assessment. Even though there are some environmental limitations associated with the property, they're no different, really, in many respects from Mr. McIntyre's analysis than what exists. So practically, we would say that, yes, you can. Is it consistent with the prior discussions that may have occurred outside of our involvement in a project? Potentially not. And that, unfortunately, is the decision and you all have to make as to, does this project move forward with that connection or does it not, and is it consistent with what the recommendations and the conversations have been between the parties that are actually negotiating the support or the non-support of this tract of land? We will stand where we are on our recommendation that we believe that the connection to the north should be stubbed to the north like it is to the south, based on the process and the procedures that we've used in similar situations throughout our community and based upon the goals and objectives of Columbia Imagine for interconnected subdivisions and neighborhoods. It is in the best interest, in our opinion, professionally, that they be connected at some point, maybe not in any of the near term, but that there's an opportunity in the future.
Mr. Stanton.
Mr. Zinner, you're saying eliminate the connection to PP or, in addition, have a northern access point?
Well, you couldn't eliminate the connection to PP. Okay. So you have to have the PP connection. That is the principal subdivision connection.
Okay.
It's over 30 lots. While it's under 100, you don't require to. However, fire service would require anything over 30 to have two points of ingress and egress. So the way that the subdivision has been reviewed, they require that the subdivision layout works. You could eliminate, and it is the commission's choice. That's why I made the comment that this is not a variance request. This is a procedural requirement that is in the subdivision regulations, and it is staff's opinion that it is in the best interest in achieving the goals and the objectives of Columbia Imagined, as well as interconnected subdivision development, that the stub be provided for future usage, as was Webster Grove to this undeveloped tract of land when Maryland Heights was developed.
Ms. Rushing.
With regard to the stub to the north, I was just curious why it's on the east side of the property as opposed to the west.
Ms. Rushing, I can't speak to that. Mr. McIntyre reviewed the project, and I would imagine that if you look at the subdivision layout, just based on my observation, you'll see where the southern access is. If you were to put a northern access. You would basically create a very long straight street tangent, which would actually become the way we would refer to it as a drag strip, and that probably is why we would offset them within the subdivision.
Okay.
But Mr. McIntyre knew why he chose this location. I'm not sure if it had to deal with environmental-related matters or if it had to deal with the observation I've just made, that you would end up with basically a drag strip street running through it, which is less desirable overall than what would be being proposed. And no disrespect to the adjacent property owner to the northeast. I would probably personally share his same concerns of having a stub street coming up to my southern property line that may or may not be used at any point in the near future.
Are we ready to form a motion, Mr. Stanton?
I have one more question before we do this.
Okay.
It was staff's desire. I'm feeling where you're coming from, but it wasn't. Usually you would have put that in your recommendations. I'm not seeing it in there, or did I miss
it? It is in the recommendation. We recommend approval of the R1 for the permanent zoning. We're recommending approval of the subdivision subject to the connection, the stub street connection being provided. That is a subject to. It is the commission's prerogative to make motion as they see fit.
Now are we ready to make a motion?
Yes.
Mr. Stanton.
I do 196.
Oh, right. We're going to do two again. We're going to do 196 first. We can do this in pieces. You guys can take turns. How's that? So, do I have a candidate to make a motion for?
I'll do 196.
Okay.
As it relates to case 16-196, Highway PP Development Permanent Zoning, I move to move for approval of R1 as a permanent city zoning pending annexation.
Second. Mr. Stanton made the motion. Ms. Burns seconded. May we have a vote, please?
Yes. Ms. Russell?
Yes.
My vote is yes. Ms. Lowe?
Yes.
Mr. Harder?
Yes.
Mr. McMahon?
Yes.
Mr. Stanton?
Yes.
Ms. Rushing?
Yes.
That's 7 in favor to approve. Motion carries.
Thank you, Ms. Burns. Recommendation for approval of the preliminary plat will be forwarded to City Council. And we need a motion for case 16-197.
Okay. In the case of 16-197, Fox Creek subdivision, I move to approve the 78-lot preliminary plat subject to the addition of a sub-street to the subject site's northern property line.
Second.
Ms. Russell moved. Mr. Stanton seconded. Ms. Burns, may we have a vote?
Yes. Ms. Russell?
Yes.
My vote is yes. Ms. Lowe?
Yes.
Mr. Harder?
Yes.
Mr. McMahon?
Yes.
Mr. Stanton?
Yes.
Ms. Rushing?
Yes.
We have 7 in favor to approve. Motion carries.
Recommendation for approval on the preliminary plat with revision will be forwarded to City Council for consideration. Thank you. That concludes our public hearing and subdivision portion of the agenda. Are there any comments from the public? Any comments of staff?
Yes.
Have we worn you out?
I'm getting there. Don't worry. Your next meeting will be October 20th. And as we discussed this evening in work session, that is the meeting at which we will be discussing the Unified Development Code. Our meeting for our main event, the main public hearing meeting, will start at 6 p.m. that evening. As discussed in work session, we will start our work session at 5 p.m., which is a half an hour earlier than our normal time. We will have a meal and opportunity for some discussion as it relates to the public hearing procedure and process on that. We do have several items that are associated with regular business on the October 20th agenda other than the public hearing that we will be holding for the Unified Development Code. And that includes a number of subdivision and public hearing items, as well as just some standard public hearing items. We will have a joint deal like we have had here this evening for two of our items, the Discovery Park subdivision. One is a CPOP plan, development plan revision, and a development plan approval. And then we will have the accompanying final plat that will go along with that. If you all are familiar with the way our process on plan development exists, a development plan constitutes preliminary plat, and then the final plat can be concurrently submitted at the same time. So that is what we will be doing with Discovery Park. And then the other two public hearings that we will have on the agenda are a revised PUD plan for the Highlands Phase 8. This is a project that has been previously brought before the Planning Commission. However, the PUD plan expired, and the PUD plan that is being considered at the October 20th meeting is similar, if not identical, to the prior approval that was given in 2009. The way that our procedure operates, if you do not execute a PUD or do not pull a building permit within 5 years, the plan is considered void. And they are desiring to go ahead and move forward with the plan, which was a two-lot subdivision revision to this particular end of one of our streets in the Highlands. And then the final project that we have is another CP plan approval. This is the Wyndham Commercial Corner. This is at the corner of Scott Boulevard and Route KK, directly southeast of Beulah Ralph Elementary. And this is a commercial corner that was zoned with the Wyndham Ridge development that is accessible both off of Route KK and off of Scott Boulevard. This is actually in the southwest corner of the village at Wyndham Ridge. That is the subdivision that is directly across from Beulah Ralph Elementary. Just to give you some context so we know where we are, yes, the maps are the same, but they're for two different projects. It is Discovery Park. We all are hopefully familiar with this area. Nakona Parkway, which is immediately there to the east. We have recently taken a plan set to the county or to the council as it relates to the extension of Nakona to connect back down into Discovery Parkway. So this particular red line on the eastern boundary is now a right-of-way for the new aligned Nakona Parkway, and it will provide access to the proposed CPOP plan and the final plat. You have then the Highlands. Again, this is at the end of Stonehaven Drive. This particular project site originally, as you'll notice, had a roadway that went through it. Part of the PUD plan eliminated the roadway and then has reallocated the lots. So we have lots now that are on either side of what has become a cul-de-sac street. And then there was an emergency access way to replace the roadway. There has been some redesign of the access way in order to meet fire code standards, and that's where really the revision to the 2009 PUD plan and the PUD plan here in 2016 exists. And then again, the last project we have is the Wyndham Commercial Corner. The village is at Wyndham Ridge, is there in the northeast, and then Beulah Ralph Elementary is what you see just to the west with its parking field while it was under development. And this is basically a two-lot, will end up being a two-lot commercial development when we're all said and done, the southerly lot being tentatively proposed as a daycare center. Just so the public is aware and our commissioners are aware before I sign off for this evening, we will be losing a staff member that is with us. Mr. Molman, the last meeting is this evening, folks. We have worn him out. The UDO finally flushed another one. And he will be taking up the role of city councilor for the city of Jeff City. And he will start on Monday. It has been an absolute pleasure working with him. He has raised the bar considerably, I think, if you all have noticed, in the last 2 years that he has been here. It's hard to believe it's been that long, but it has been, with development agreements and developer frustration, and then causing staff occasional heartburn. But we have truly enjoyed the expertise that he brings in the law profession as a prior to coming joining us private practice land use attorney. And we wish him well. And if you all want to roast him, you can now or wait till after the meeting. But we are going to be without legal representation for a little while. We do have an excellent legal counsel and staff to support us on the second floor of the building. We are not sure who we will be assigned at this point yet to work with the commission in the interim period of time when they are searching for Mr. Molman's replacement, but we will be having somebody new join us hopefully here in the next, I'd hopefully say 6 months. So if we had questions, hopefully you guys got your answers today in work session. He's not that far away, and if we do pay him well, maybe he'll come back to represent us. But and as we always say, when we lose a very vital staff member, if anything goes wrong after this point, you just blame it on the guy that left. So we appreciate your service, and that is all I have to say for this evening. I thank you for your attention. This has been a warm-up for the October 20th meeting, what I wouldn't have thought would have been a four-hour meeting tonight, so, or at least three.
Three hours. We started at 7 tonight. Thank you, Mr. Zenner.
Well,
I'm sure the commission wishes to echo Mr. Zenner's accolades and
dismay.
Russell?
Dismay.
And dismay, yes. And I just want to say we've appreciated having someone to help keep Mr. Zenner on track now. Thank you very much for all your assistance.
It's been my honor to work.
I can't believe we wore you out.
I know.
Any other comments from commissioners?
I was just wondering who was going to keep us out of trouble.
Oh.
And congratulations.
Yes. I also wanted to add, I should have thought of this when Mrs. Close was speaking. She's left the room now, but she had mentioned her concern with the deer and wildlife, and I just wanted to mention it to the public that wildlife corridors is an item on the planning and zoning working agenda list, so it is something that we're taking under consideration. Is there a motion for adjournment?
I move to adjourn.
Thank you, Mr. Stanton.
Second.
Thank you, Ms. Russell. So moved.